call from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Talking in songs.
101 WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to be with you all over our Detroit listening area, all across the country, and those of you listening on the Internet, all across the country and around the world at www.wrif.com. If you want to make the call, and you can do that either locally or nationally, 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. If you want to contact us, well, you know, it's not like I've got a frog in my pocket or I'm using the Royal We. It's Rick Fox, our producer and phone screener. So there, it does qualify as the plural pronoun. You can contact us at 313-298-WRIF or by email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Let me not say anything for like about half a second. I'm just listening to all this roaring in my ear. I hope that's not coming out over the air. Bill Walters had a wonderful show, and he was trying to get an extraordinarily interesting and talented 10-year-old guitar player on the air and had nothing but technical problems. We just had maybe about 13 or 14 people in the WRF studios here 6 minutes ago. Everybody cleared out. And they said, we gotta clear the decks for the Night Call show. I think people are still outside. My website, peterwerby.com, peterwerbe.com. Werbe is my last name, peterwerby.com. The reason that I stress that frequently is it often has the issues that I talk about. And I try to give you an alternative from what you're going to get out of the cables and out of the nightly news and out of the daily papers. Well, this is an extraordinarily easy job. I mean, I know some of you think that anyways. You know that old Dire Straits song, Money for Nothing? You know, this bitter fan of rock stars. Someone was telling me, what was the deal? They're saying, you're forgetting too much. Mark Knopfler, right. I mean, yeah, you know, I got so much in my brain. Here's the deal with memory. As you get older, people, once you get over like 40, you start thinking, oh no, am I getting Alzheimer's? I can't remember anything. It's like having a 1996 computer, and the processor is very slow, except you're just loading it up with the information and data. So the data retrieval process takes a lot longer, and you got more in there. I mean, think about it. If you're 16 years old, and I mean, everything you ever thought or felt or saw or experienced is in there in your brain box, but you don't retrieve it all. So maybe you've got of the kind of memory. If you're 16 years old, you're probably interested in what's happened over the last couple of years, and you have memories from when you were 6, 7, and 8, 9. Well, as you start to put the decades on, well, there's a tremendous amount of information, things you've seen, you've watched, you've read. So... But are you asking me, is that an excuse for poor memory? Well, yeah, I guess so. 313-298-WRIF. I often tell people, they say, why did you get into radio? And I say, well, I'd tried honest work before, and it was just too damn hard, so I got into this. But that's not entirely true, but that's often what I say. But here's why I'm saying it's even easier. If the world made any sense whatsoever, what I'd be talking about is pretty complex and would have probably taken me hours and hours and hours to research. And I'm looking through some of this information here. Federal Reserve Chairman Allen, well, let me tell you what we're going to talk about. I mean, you can talk about any of these things that I mentioned. It's your ball game as well as mine. 313-298-WRIF. In fact, there's open lines for you right now. And if you want to initiate the conversation about something that you want to talk about or you think I'm not, hit those phones. Anyway, we're going to be talking about Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ, right? And last week, essentially all we talked about was religion and belief in God and what have you. And I can't remember the last time I got so many emails at calledtalkyes@yahoo.com about the subject. And also, we're going to talk about gay marriage. So, in a sense, it's a no-brainer. There's nothing much to do for research for either of those. But I want to tie it into some stuff. So if you want to talk about that, if you've seen the movie, if you've seen Gibson's movie, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. The charges that it's unnecessarily bloody and brutal and torturous, consistent with all the movies that Mel Gibson has been in, is there. The anti-Semitism charge remains. But here's what I think, and I'll just tell you a little about what I think about that. And that is that I've heard people, as they've come out of the movie, saying, this was a film about love. It made me look at myself and think how much I have to love the world. And then other people are coming out and saying, well, now we know who killed Jesus. Yeah. Very, not disguising the fact that they think it was, quote, the Jews, you know, who killed Jesus. I mean, it's pretty clear. Gibson believes that as well, even though he's denied it. I mean, it's embedded in the film from everything I've ever read about it. And you say, well, Pete, you haven't even seen the film. Well, we're going to have to work with it on that disadvantage on my part, because I'm never going to see it. I mean, I'm just not going to watch 2 hours and 10 minutes of torture, right? Whether, no matter what the purpose, whether you can convince me it's some divine, you know, presentation or whatever. I mean, this ain't for me. In any event, here's what we could be talking about. The fact that prescription drugs are now a burden to many, many families, tens of millions of people. And this is what I'm saying. If the world made any sense, this is what we would be talking about. A third of Americans say paying for prescription drugs is a problem in their families. And so, let me see. I mean, that's tens of millions of people. And one of the ways that people respond is by cutting their meds in half or taking them every other day. This in a country in which the pharmaceutical companies, for instance, are making billions and billions. But, you know, this would take, again, some work on my part, but who wants to talk about that? It's not sexy. Now, this is really, really unsexy. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan urged Congress on Wednesday to deal with the country's escalating budget deficit by cutting benefits for future Social Security retirees. Who cares about that, right? Here's the deal. You and me are, if you're working, are now paying for our parents and our grandparents, the Social Security. So the deal is, when we retire, the generation below us, those of you, in your, for instance, in your teens and what have you, and those of you in school, when you're working, you're going to be paying for us. But since Bush has driven the country into a deficit, what Greenspan is saying is probably true. Without action, he warned, long-term interest rates would rise, seriously harming the economy. He said, with a projected record red ink deficit of $500 billion this year, it will worsen dramatically once the baby boom generation starts becoming eligible for Social Security benefits in just 4 years. He said, the prospect of the retirement of 77 million baby boomers will radically change the mix of people working and paying into the Social Security retirement fund and those drawing benefits from the fund. Okay, this is so boring, I won't even talk about, because who cares? You know, I mean, what we care about are gay marriages and the passion. And now, and I'm not denigrating the fact that we should be talking about those things, but let's realize that there are people manipulating our present and our future, and none of it to our benefit, unless you happen to be in that upper 5%, you know, the billionaires. New Labor Department reports show big spike in mass layoffs. This is from Debbie Stabenow's office. Michigan lost 162,300 manufacturing jobs since January 2001. Now, what happened in January 2001? I can't remember. Anybody remember? Oh, yeah, that's when Bush took office, wasn't it? Gay marriages. Do I have my gay marriage thing here? We'll get into the stuff that I... Well, let me preface it like this. 313-298-WRIF. You can look at the health of any society. For instance, anthropologists go into what we call primitive societies, and they look to see whether the social mechanisms, you know, how people relate to one another and kinship relationships and traditions and the mythopoetics that explain life to them. You know, they don't buy the passion. They've got their other stories about life and death and reasons for existence and all that. And they can look. They have the indices of what makes for a coherent society. Well, this is a Western conceit, if you will, like anthropology. We're studying them. You know, they don't ever come study us. When they do, when they enter our society, they usually have these wonderful little societies with tribes and bands, and you know, all they got to do is get touched by the West, and suddenly they're a busboy in Manila or Caracas or something like that. But one of the ways you can look at a society and see its coherence or lack of it, and in this case, we're talking about a lack of it. I kind of jotted down what I thought were some of the characteristics of societies in which a coherence was lacking, where there wasn't a sense of unity in a nation or in a culture, where people didn't have, I'm losing my negatives here. Where people had or didn't have a foreboding of the future, whether people saw that their circumstances were going to improve, and particularly for their children or not. When all that's gone, what you begin to have in its place is a politics of fear, a politics of resentment. And it's marked by a lot of things. Extreme nationalism it becomes very prominent. Religious fanaticism becomes, you know, sweeps a particular nation. Minorities become scapegoated. And sectors of the population, particularly those that are the most fearful, begin to express a moral certitude that cannot be challenged. We know we're right. Everything we believe must be enforced upon everyone else. And, of course, they can't convince everyone else, so they want the state to enforce their beliefs on everyone else. And what happens in the meantime is great conflicts arise because of the insistence of these people that only my way is what will prevail. That unless the society adopts these particular tenets, all is lost. We will not be favored by God, or, you know, I mean, it's usually a mix. And you know, I'm not talking about liberals or leftists or progressives. I'm talking about people on the conservative right and to the right of that. The people that for some reason or other seem to have the ascendancy, mostly because on one hand, the people that control it all have the wealth, so they can control a lot of the cultural apparatuses that determine the way we think, you know, the media and what have you. And then you have these terribly fearful people that operate in their orbit because they hope. I mean, they have a couple of hopes. They hope their financial problems will be solved, and their fears about layoff. I mean, they're understandable fears. I mean, the middle class is under attack. The working class is under attack. So what they do is they say, well, I'll identify with my betters. I'll identify with the wealthy, the privileged, with the plutocracy, the ultra-rich and the ultra-powerful. And maybe if I, you know, stand by them, you know how that is. You don't want to be with the riffraff. You don't want to be with the ordinary middle class or working class in your mind. My mind is with the rich and powerful, even though you're never going to see anything like they have. And to them, you're just their cannon fodder. Because there's not enough of them to even constitute more than 4, 5, 6%. So they need cannon fodder. They need people that will work against their own best interests. And that's what that's what conservatives are all about. Now, I was thinking about this thing real quickly about gay marriage. Also, I don't know what anybody. We don't have a computer, so I don't know what you want to talk about. But I'd like to see any of you have seen the Gibson movie. But also, this here, this report here from San Francisco about Mayor Gavin Newsom of San Francisco accused Bush of political showmanship and discrimination because he's advocating this amendment to the Constitution. Very typical of conservatives. Don't get my way, so let's change the Constitution. And most of the Constitution is about process. But these conservatives, whenever they lose any political battle, they want to alter the Constitution. And they want to, again, this moral certitude, they want to force their views upon people through the apparatus of the political state. So this is why they're authoritarians. They're gonna make us do what they want. Their religious beliefs, their social beliefs, whatever. What we're saying, what the decent people of this country are saying, the tolerant and generous people of this country are saying, hey, as long as you don't hurt other people, I don't really care what you do. In fact, I support diversity. It's not what I want to do, particularly, you know, any different aspect of life, but I'm not going to pass laws so that to make you an outlaw, to say you're not a member of the community. I'm not going to put in the basic law of this country something that says that people we know at work, our relatives, our sons, our daughters, our friends, our relatives, that you're less than a full human being. Now, there's a photograph which I wish I could show to everyone. It's outside of the San Francisco City Hall, and it's two young women who have just been married. I think about 3,500 same-sex marriages have been performed there. And I think it's wonderful. It is the kind of mass joy. I mean, think about the last wedding you went to and how joyful it was, and how the whole community came out, their friends and what have you, and family come out to celebrate. Well, here in San Francisco, thousands of people have gotten hooked up, hitched, married, and they just happen to be of the same sex. And these are people that are so deliriously joyful, not only of just having of announcing to the community this permanent union, but also living in a city that recognizes them as full human beings. That's why they've had these, they had a big town meeting. 1,000 people came out to say thank you, Mayor, and Gavin, who's Gavin Newsom, the mayor, our hero. And then in this photograph I saw in the New York Times today, so it had these two young women kissing after getting married, and surrounding them were these awful figures with these signs saying "Burn in hell, homos." I mean, it's yeah, I mean, sometimes when you're talking quickly, you have to depend on cliches. Talk about a no-brainer. Talk about the mean-spirited people of the world versus those people that are in love and radiate joy and are solid members of the community. Now, I mean, it's always been the conservatives that have stopped or attempted to. You know, it's like one of the things, they win every battle but lose every war. Conservatives have tried to stop every decent progressive move forward in this country since its origin. Remember, it was the conservatives that opposed the American Revolution. They were conservatives. They said we should stay part of England. And it was, you know, same with everything. Now, this Mel Gibson thing, just read you a couple of just lines from some of the reviews about it. This is from Jamie Bernard. And she's the film critic of the New York Daily News. I believe that's owned by the conservative Rupert Murdoch. It's either, tell me, it's either that or the other tabloid there. She says, Mel Gibson devout or is he mad? Had Gibson claimed Napoleon helped him direct instead of divine spirits, the answer would be clear. Even so, a touch of madness is often a good thing in a director. But the passion feels like a propaganda tool rather than entertainment for a general audience. She saw it. I haven't. Is it anti-Semitic? She says, yes. Jews are vilified in both little and big, pretty much nonstop, in ways both little and big, pretty much nonstop for 2 hours, 7 minutes. Gibson cuts from the hooked nose of one bad Jewish character to the hooked nose of another in the ensuing scene. And he misappropriates an important line from the Jewish celebration, from a Jewish celebration, and slaps it into a Christian context. Most unforgivable is that Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor of Palestine who decreed that Jesus be crucified, is portrayed as a sensitive, kind-hearted soul who is sickened by the tortures the Jewish mobs heap upon his prisoner. Pilate agrees to the crucifixion only against his better judgment. The most offensive line of the script, which was co-written by Gibson about Jews accepting blame, was not cut from the movie as initially reported, only its subtitle was removed. Now, what she's talking about here is that Pontius Pilate was such a brutal dictatorship. He had like the same job that Paul Bremer has in Iraq. He was like the proconsul for the Roman Empire in Palestine. And he had thousands of people crucified and, you know, scourged and what have you. It's kind of the deal that they did. He was too brutal for even Rome, though, and was eventually recalled. Now, she says, religious intolerance has been used as an excuse for some of history's worst atrocities. The Passion of the Christ is a brutal, nasty film that demonizes Jews at an unfortunate time in history. Now, she's right, has the right to her opinion, right? Well, apparently she was just inundated by this hate mail, threats, and what have you. Typical of what you get from right-wing religious fanatics. David Edelstein, writing at Slate.com, when this is on my website at peterwerby.com, he says, in part, bad reviews won't matter either, since Gibson has called his critics, quote, the forces of Satan, or more charitable, the dupes of Satan. So I wonder, well, am I a dupe of Satan, or part of the forces, the active forces of Satan? I am the horror of Babylon. You didn't hear that. I shouldn't do that. You know, there's some people get whacked out by radio. So, you know, they go, I just flipped somebody out somewhere, probably. Let's see. I know, after describing it, he says it sounds like a Monty Python movie. You ever seen The Life of Brian by Monty Python? You're thinking there must be something to The Passion of the Christ besides watching a man tortured to death, right? And David Edelstein says, actually, no. This is a 2-hour and 6-minute snuff movie, The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre, that thinks it's an act of faith. For Gibson, Jesus is defined not by his teaching in life, by his message of mercy and social justice, some of it rooted in the Jewish Torah, much of it defiantly personal, but by the manner of his execution. So, well, lots of other stuff here. Let me get you in on this. I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. This is WRIF's time that we get you folks on the air. 313-298-WRIF. Emails go to calltalkyes, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And Rick Fox is our phone screener, our producer for the night as well. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. You know, I called. I was going to talk about the Passion of the Christ, and that was my initial call. But I was listening more about other things you were saying, and you know, the gay marriage thing. I don't mean to jump around, but I was
jump around. Hey, we're all ADD on this bus.
Yeah. But you know, I think a lot of those people that hold those hate signs out in California, it's against what they supposedly, you know, what they believe. I mean, I'm a Christian, but you know what? People can do what they want to. I mean, love is love. Those people, I bet you they're not going to get divorced. They love each other. They know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what's the most prominent heterosexual marriage we've been treated to lately? What was Britney Spears' record? 55 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Well, that was all right, because it was a man and a woman. Yeah.
Yeah, but those people, I shouldn't say it like that, but, you know, gay couples, if they, you know, join in a ceremony, what they really mean it. And I don't think, they don't usually break up, you know what I mean? They know what they're going for. They know they're going to deal with persecution. Good for them. You know?
Well, I hope they don't break up as much as us heterosexual couples. What, only like 50% of heterosexual marriages are intact.
Yeah. Well, it'd
be hard to do worse than that. The only thing I can't understand is what, you know, they always say that this is going to destroy the foundations of of our civilization and destroy marriage. Well, if it becomes legal, I have to say it has not occurred to me to go to San Francisco and and marry a man.
Yeah, I hear you. I understand. I'm totally with you on that. I really think that it's self-deprecating that people have those signs and they go out there and do that. I think that's actually sending a bad message to other people about whatever their faith is, you know. So, whatever, you know, I mean.
Well, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. You know, I'm telling you, I was actually not entirely telling the truth. It did occur to me to do that. A gay friend of mine actually emailed me from San Francisco and asked me if I wanted to come out and marry him. And, I mean, I'm married. I'm married to a woman. And I was thinking, well, that'd be cool, but I guess you can't do it. I mean, yeah, you could get married and not consummate. I mean, it was just my way of spitting in the face of these conservatives, these, you know, these right-wing religious freaks who want to impose their values on everyone else, people that don't accept it. I mean, I'd love to say, you know, I burn my bra, right? Rick Fox is looking at me like I'm crazy. I hug a tree. I married a man. All this stuff. What else? What else did they always... I'm a drug addict, you know. Actually, I was high on drugs when I burned my bra and married a man. Yeah, I was in the woods and we were hugging a tree as well. Like that. Having sex with animals. Do it all the time. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Here, this is amazing. This is Richard, who's writing from Tokyo, Japan. He says, I can hear your show over here in Japan via the internet. Keep up the good work. However, there's always a but, isn't there? He says, I take exception with your characterization of Nader's candidacy in 2000 and 2004. He says, I've heard you mention a couple of times it is more complicated, and it is more complicated than you give it credit. There are a wide array of arguments that support Nader's position for running, which the left gatekeepers who are now going berserk over his candidacy ignore. Well, I agree. I think the idea is, and people that supported Nader, you know, argue about this forever, that it was Nader who actually sunk the Bush, or I'm sorry, the Gore candidacy in New Hampshire. People don't talk about New Hampshire; they just talk about Florida, where there was an outright theft by felonious means of the election there. Oh, you know, by the way, about gay marriage. His dimness, Bush, he said he was going to go, he would support this constitutional amendment, but he said he would allow, oh, isn't that nice of him, he would allow for civil union. Of course, he did not allow for civil unions when he was governor of Texas. Anyways, he said, and this is, again, the mantra of these conservatives, that these activist judges have imposed their will on the American people, and the people should decide, not activist judges. Well, what do we think about that, Senor Bush? I mean, didn't the people of the United States vote that they did not want you to be the president of the United States? You lost the popular vote. The people had spoken. The activist judges on the Supreme Court, your dad's buddies, selected you as the president. And in terms of letting the people decide, well, I mean, where should the people decide? How about the people of San Francisco? How about them deciding? How about the people that are in love? The what do these morons, these religious morons, always say? God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And they think that's just the wittiest thing in the whole world. Well, Adam and Steve are people, and maybe Adam and Steve, a couple of people decide they want to get married because they're in love. L-O-V-E, love, right? Yeah. But, you know, back to what I was saying about a culture and a nation with no focus in the present and a foreboding of the future. Extreme nationalism, religious fanaticism, scapegoating of minorities, gays in this case, when, you know, they're not thinking about Arab people. And this moral certitude. This absolute assuredness that what you believe has to be enforced upon everyone else by the political state. And so wherever these people touch a nerve in the body politic or in the social fabric, they create this big hassle. They're always creating, these right-wingers, these conservatives, some problem, some argument. You know, I think of myself a really tolerant person. But after this Gibson film, I find myself, my tolerance level has kind of shrunk for my Christian and Jewish and Muslim friends. I mean, I'm getting this, like, really anti-religious bent that I frequently have that I think is inappropriate. People want to worship Allah or Jesus or whoever. It's up to them. But once these people start these arguments, you know, that it's hard to stay out of them. know, somebody punches you, it's hard to be a pacifist. So these people are troublemakers. They're busybodies. Everything they've ever said about history is wrong. Everything that they've ever advocated throughout history has created nothing but wars and human misery. We've got to send them off somewhere where they can, you know, like bother each other and stop bothering us that want to get on with our lives, that don't care whether you're gay, that that want a fair economy, that don't want to have to face a world filled with the possibilities of wars and disease and starvation and what have you. It's pretty easy. Everything we need for a peaceful, just world is out there. As it says on my website, another world is possible. And it's the conservative ideology that protects the wealthy, privileged people of the world that's right now making that not possible. All right, let's take another call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Peter. Maurice, long time
caller. Hey, Maurice. Hi.
Hey, Peter, there's no doubt in my mind that our government is broke.
Yeah, I know.
And I tell you why. This thing, you've been in a rave, what, 30 years?
Oh, man, I couldn't be. I'm only about 33 years old. Go ahead. I'm only kidding.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Last week, Peter, Howard Stern, you pulled off a clear channel radio station.
Yeah.
He's been doing this thing ever since he's been, how you know. And then there's another radio station got fined $750,000 by the FCC. Because somebody called up the DJ, started talking about sex and drugs. They fired him. They're trying to get everything they can. All because, so what, Janet Jackson stole the breast. It was a long shot and low light. I didn't really see that much of her breast, nothing but the little ring thing.
Well, I'll tell you, Maurice, Clear Channel is kind of up there as a big target. I mean, it dominates radio broadcasting in this country, and I was about to say for better or for worse, but it is for worse. And they own almost 1,200 radio stations. They've been really held under the microscope, and they were supposed to go, and they did. The president testified before the Federal Communications Commission or a Senate hearing. I can't remember which. But in any event, they actually apologized to the committee for the type of programming they had allowed, like, what's his name, the Love Sponge in Florida and for Howard Stern. I mean, as a broadcaster, I don't like the idea of any sort of censorship. On the other hand, a lot of what these people say are really repulsive, racist, sexist, you know, hideous. And they're all right-wingers, by the way, all these guys that are so sexually liberated. And they make it hard to argue for free speech or completely unrestricted free speech.
Hey, Peter, got another one for you. Do you think if it wasn't for 9/11, which I think this government has something to do, that Bush could have got away with the two lethal wars that he started?
No.
I think it's like this. You create a catastrophe of a large magnitude, you can write your own paycheck.
Yeah, you got it. Maurice, thank you, as usual. Now, talk about censorship. I opened up Yahoo News, and I think you just go to news.yahoo.com. And I want to always see what they're promoting as the top story. And the headline was, now there's Hugo Chavez, who is the president of Venezuela. And just like in the 1950s and 1960s, the U.S. government, this time, you know, Bush, trying to overthrow Chavez. Chavez sits on a lot of oil. I don't want to get into the whole thing about him. Anyways, the headline was, Chavez calls Bush an a-hole. Now, I can say that whole word out, I think, now. I'm pretty sure I can say that. But I'm old school, so I can't bring myself to say it. But there it was, right up there, big headline. Chavez calls Bush an a-hole. And I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty wild for a headline. So I thought, I'm going to go print that out. I don't know why I didn't print it out earlier. And so I go back to look at the story. And it says, Chavez denounces Bush as foes fight troops. Then it says, here's the lead story now. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez called President Bush an blank, blank, blank hole on Sunday for meddling and vowed never to quit office like his Haitian counterpart. Chavez, who often says the U.S. is backing opposition efforts to topple his leftist governments, which is absolutely true, accused Bush of heeding advice from imperialist aides to support a brief 2002 coup against him. Absolutely true. Chavez roared at a huge rally of supporters in Caracas. He was a blank, blank, blank hole to believe them. Well, so much for that. By the way, on my website at peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, the question is asked and answered, is Bush an a-hole? And you can go there and find out the answer. It's probably a little different than you would suspect. Rick Fox, another caller for us before we take our break. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I'd like to mention President Bush's latest scam on the American people, reclassifying fast food as manufacturing jobs.
All right, tell us about that. That's great.
The Labor Department, to cover up the loss of high-paid manufacturing jobs, has decided they are going to declare fast food jobs. Building hamburgers and tacos is
sure.
Manufacturing.
That's an assembly line there.
They are indeed manufacturing something. They're manufacturing a great scam.
And, well, I mean, all those jobs are high-paying union jobs, aren't they? Oh, no. That's right. A little above minimum wage. Yeah, but you are talking, my friend, about something that is important. I mean, we're not supposed to be talking about that. We're supposed to be talking.
You know where the Detroit media put that?
How?
Neil Rubin's column. He covered part of a letter released by Congressman Dingell. That's
yeah.
The only reporting I've seen of it in the Detroit newspapers.
Well, good. Good for him. The Detroit newspapers just laid off 100 people.
Yeah, I know one of my union brothers, a guy named Manny.
Yeah, and I didn't want to get into old wounds, but Neil Rubin scabbed on the newspaper strike.
Yeah, I know. I was on the other side of that. I was on the picket line out there in Sterling Heights.
Yeah, well, I was out there, too.
First time I've ever smelled tear gas.
It wasn't mine. I hope it's not the last. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, we should hope it's the last. But in terms of our involvement, whenever the people start to get too powerful, it's answered by tear gas. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the RIF Cyber Group. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the RIF on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the RIF Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tycoons and BT's Avenue B, a five-star menu with Detroit's finest food. Email entertainment. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and
at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with former Ohio State quarterback Mike Tomczak about his days playing for the Chicago Bears and coach Mike Ditka.
In 1987, we were playing New England Patriots. McMahon got hurt, and I went in for about three or four series, and I got a coach that's stressing the heck out of me. And then he says, okay, you're going back in. If you screw up one more time, I'm going to release you.
Oh, man.
So sure enough, 3rd and 5, ball hits receiver's hands, gets intercepted. And I find myself walking to New England sideline like, Forget this. I'm going over here.
Wow. Mike Tomczak's with us, the old Buckeye, Chicago Bear. Let's see. You were even a Detroit Lion.
Yeah, I had a cup of coffee there before I broke my leg. And it was great because Matt Millen let me go, and I told him, it's going to hurt you.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere. Now it's the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff Rock and Roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
Isn't it
101 WRIF.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling this guy, got this woman, and she made the mistake of hanging up on us.
Why'd you hang up?
I have company and I am busy.
Oh, well, you say usually when people hang up, I don't know if you're new, if you just got citizenship, usually people say goodbye before they hang up the telephone.
I told you I had to go.
I remember you were laughing about the erection, but...
No, I said I had to go,
no,
and I'm hanging up. Goodbye.
People, usually, yeah, say goodbye.
Wait,
that's good.
Yeah, okay.
She didn't have any company.
What is she talking about?
Company.
Liar. Yeah, I know. People lie on a...
Let's call back and say we're a caterer. And if there's nobody over here, they'll say, liar!
Let me tell you what's really going to happen. You're going to call up as the so-called caterer, and she's going to be, I just talked to you. I said goodbye.
You never know.
If it's in Vegas as a bet, I'm not so sure I'm going to put any money on this.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm looking for you. This is a caterer. You having a party over there?
Not today.
By God.
You lied. You said you had company, lady.
I have company, but I don't have a party going on.
That's hilarious.
You lied.
You lied.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Broadcasting worldwide on the web, you're listening to 101 WRIF at WRIF.com, a service of Greater Media. Keep it here for more Riff Rock coming right up.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We pulled out our list of funny but real names and just started dialing.
Is there a dick blower there?
Yeah.
Oh, is this a dick blower?
Yeah.
And what do you charge?
A whole lot.
No, how much?
How much you want to pay?
I don't know. I was asking you. I mean, I assume you set the price.
You're a big smart ass, ain't you?
What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm sorry to bother you. We're wondering, is there a dick coming there?
There's no dick coming. There's Richard coming.
I got a listing for a dick coming?
No.
It wasn't?
I've never been called Dick in my life.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dick's short for Richard, though, is it not?
Not in my case.
No, I understand. You're just trying to avoid me coming back and saying, well, hurry up, get a towel.
Get a towel for what?
For the fact that there's a dick coming there.
Oh, for
God's sake.
You know, conservative talk radio, and because everyone knows it's a lie. These are a lying, murderous, unfair, intolerant bunch, and they put forth all of this stuff about being so sanctified and being so. And I'm not talking about individuals. I'm talking about these public figures, where they Bush and Cheney, crooks in business, lying to get into the National Guard, not showing up for duty. I mean, moral certitude, kiss my butt, all of these guys. Now, this is from John. He sent this into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, Howard Stern finally turns on Bush and gets silenced in return. Remember, we were talking about how I'm sorry, I was just looking. Thought maybe there was something wrong with our phone, but I'm sorry. That we were saying that Clear Channel stations had suspended Howard Stern. because of his awful, awful language and what he allowed on. And I heard that. It was awful. But I've heard the same awful things before. But here's what happened. He turned on Bush. During late 2002, during much of 2003, John tells us, Stern was so ridiculously pro-Bush and pro-Iraq war that he says he almost stopped listening. Almost. So it was then when I nearly wept with joy on Monday morning when Stern, upon returning from a week-long vacation, announced, over vacation I read Al Franken's Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. It's great, he said. It is phenomenal. And then he's gone. Because the head of Clear Channel, he was running, you know, these pro-war rallies in the lead-up to the Iraq illegal, unnecessary war. Remember that? No weapons of mass destruction? Oh, hey, who wants to talk about that old subject? Anyway, so that's pretty interesting. And, oh, yeah, the other thing about easy about being one of these right-wing freaks on the air, all they got to do is repeat slogans. And that's it. But if you really want to know the truth, it takes some digging. And I can't do it without you. I mean, half the stuff on my website at peterwerby.com is from listeners that I never could have found in a million years. All right, let's go to our phones. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. Joanne from Troy.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
I seen The Passion yesterday, and I got to tell you, it was a beautifully made movie.
Really?
I was raised a Catholic. I knew the whole story. And if anything, it made the Romans, I think, look worse than the Jews. I wouldn't say it's anti-Semite at all.
Well, I'll tell you. You know why? You could put it this way. I suspect you're not an anti-Semite.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So you don't see those things. You don't look for those things. And I'll bet you that if no one had ever mentioned that it wouldn't even occur to you.
No, it would never have.
However, the descriptions of it, of the way they portray the Jewish mob. See, one of the things you got to remember, Mel Gibson does not accept the teachings of Vatican II, which absolve the Jews. Isn't that nice of them? Absolve the Jews of this blood guilt. He doesn't accept that.
Right.
And the story he took this from was this anti-Semitic nun's story of the crucifixion in the 19th century. I mean, a lot of it is in the eyes of the beholder. I understand that.
Right. But I thought it was an excellent movie. I think people should go see it. It'll open your eyes up.
To what?
To, I think, just people of any faith. I think if, assuming that's exactly what happened or similar to what happened, for someone to do that for his people, that's beyond belief. I just thought it was very good.
And wasn't it uncomfortable watching that? I mean, I couldn't imagine sitting through that.
It was hard. It was brutal at first.
Yeah.
But I think the story it told was worth hearing.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
It was full. There was a lot of people there, and I think people got a lot out of it.
He spent $30 million of his own money, and it's already grossed almost $115 million just over since Ash Wednesday.
Yeah, it was packed.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. French theaters won't show Passion. French cinema chains are refusing to distribute or screen Mel Gibson's controversial film. This is according to the Chicago Sun-Times. The Passion of the Christ, because of fears it will spark a new outbreak of anti-Semitism. There's big problems with anti-Semitic acts, not people's stupid prejudices against Jews or anyone else, but I had a find. Jean-Paul Sartre was this French philosopher, and he has this essay called Portrait of an Anti-Semite. I remember reading that in college, being so moved by it. I ought to haul that out. Anyways, France is the only European country where there is still no distribution deal for the film, which depicts the last day when we know all that. Anyways, French cinema won't, Joanne just said didn't see anti-Semitism in it. They won't show it because they're afraid of an outbreak of anti-Semitism. Oh, is there French? Those cheese-eating, surrender monkeys, what do they know? Those fools, they would not back the United States in its crusade against weapons of mass destruction. Oh, yeah, I forgot. The French were 100% correct, weren't they? It was Bush and his buddies Cheney and Rumsfeld and Powell, they were the liars. They reported, oh, you think I'm being too hard, am I? Okay, they were grossly mistaken. They said there was 100%, and actually there was zero. You don't get much more wrong than that. All right, so the French were right, and now they're saying they won't show the passion. Thank you, Rick Fox. Hi, this is Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Mike Gibson calling again. I called last week.
Welcome.
I saw the Mel Gibson movie, The Passion of the Christ. I had to say it was the most disgusting movie I have ever seen in my entire life.
Well, how, Mike, you just heard Joanne said it was powerful, gripping, it was worth seeing.
Not worth seeing. Anybody who says this film is worth saying is worth seeing is lying, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it was people were throwing up, people were crying in the theater. There's two people that had heart attacks in the theater that I watched it in. It was disgusting beyond belief.
Mike, come on, there wasn't two people with heart attacks in the theater.
I'm serious, I'm dead serious. It was the most awful movie I've ever seen. I'll never see it again. I had a friend that saw it twice.
Wow.
And she threw up and got sick twice while seeing it.
What do you think about here? This one reviewer called it the Texas how did you call it? Phrase. Something the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre.
Exactly. It's the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre. It was like, it was worse than any Chainsaw Massacre movie I've ever seen. I've seen both of them.
Wow. Wow. All right. Thanks, Mike. Get some more opinions on it. Others of you have seen it. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing well.
One thing I wanted to point out is you're talking about what I consider neoconservatism and neoliberalism as well. The fact is that if you look up the definition of what liberal and conservative mean in the dictionary, they really aren't current with how those words are being used. One of the things that this administration bothers me with is, you know, they talk about the redefining of marriage. How about the redefining of tax breaks? They call it relief.
Yeah.
The death tax used to be the estate tax and was meant to level the playing field so there wouldn't be a privileged class that carried along its wealth from generation to generation, like a king's son might be elevated afterwards.
Sure.
You know, redefining marriage, I don't see gays redefining marriage. They just want the same benefits that everyone else has.
I don't understand the objections. The only objection that I've heard since this issue has come up was that someone who said that he was religiously opposed and found it offensive. I said, well, that's no reason for, you know, to enforce that on others. And he said, okay. But he said this could very well mean the more that homosexuality became socially acceptable, that probably the number of people that identified themselves with whatever biological or emotional tendencies in themselves, that there would be more gay people. And I went, yeah, so what? I mean, maybe that's a way that the species deals with the obvious overpopulation that we have. You still get love, companionship, sex, and we're not filling the world with more unneeded babies.
Peter, it's America. It's an election year.
Sure.
Please, lie to me. Lie to me.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to vote my intellect. I want to vote my gut.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to vote my pocketbook even. I just when I think about those gays, every once in a while I get this. When I think about what gays are doing, I said, you think about guys, right? Because when you think about gay women, oh, that's kind of sexy, you know. So I propose to some of these right wingers that they at least allow women to marry, because then these guys could fantasize about that. And that's kind of a nice trade-off.
You know, I'm more libertarian now than anything, and you know what I'd like?
What's
that's
that?
Banning stuff.
I agree. Thank you.
Bye.
Appreciate it. Let's see here. Ron is writing from Fort Wayne, Indiana, where he's listing at WRIF.com, and he wrote in to talktalkyes@yahoo.com. He says that The Park Service at the Grand Canyon has listed in the pamphlets they pass out to visitors that the Grand Canyon is only 5,000 years old and was created by the Great Flood, which Noah's Ark was involved in. You know what, Ron? I don't believe this. I do not believe that's the case. We're going to need somebody. There's a couple people that listen in Denver, I know. They're pretty careful, unless the Park Service has been taken over by some, you know, right, what it, in fact, this is called the Wingnut Christians, that Bush is putting into all these positions of importance that in these bureaucracies, these commissions and, you know, different departments of the government, these far right-wing fundamentalist Christians. And that is the basis, not their expertise in a particular field, but that they meet this ideological litmus test. Very bad. We're off in an extraordinarily bad direction. The people running this government, the unelected, the loser. Remember that? This is the loser. The guy that came in second in the 2002 election is now turning this into a right-wing fundamentalist Christian nation.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Hey, heads up, musicians. If you're looking for a great sound and pro recording experience that fits within your budget, then you've got to check out Midwest Studios. Midwest Studios is a fully professional, state-of-the-art recording studio built to meet the demands of the Motor City's growing music community. Now, don't chance your sound with just anybody. Along with Midwest's outstanding facility come certified engineers with countless credits under their belts. They'll help you capture that sound that defines your band. We've had the opportunity to host some of our riff sessions at Midwest with national acts like Fuel and Seether, Default, Smile Empty Soul, and more. And Midwest really does provide you with a top-notch facility without breaking the bank. Midwest Studios is over 4,000 square feet and houses two different studios, allowing them to be the most inexpensive recording studio of its kind in Michigan. To book your time, call Midwest Studios at 248-844-8010. That's 248-844-8010. Get on over there and check them out, or go online at MidwestStudios.net.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
If you want a show that's going to kick some ass, give me a hell yeah.
Ozfest 2004. Starring the biggest Hellraiser of all.
And one bad son of a bitch,
Ozzy Osbourne.
What? Are you saying you want more?
How about a reunited Judas Priest?
With Rob Halford. I don't think you heard me.
I said Judas Priest is back.
One more?
Slayer.
Jamul Bourguir.
Super Joint Ritual.
And Zach Wilde's Black Label Society. Plus, on the Hot Topic second stage, Slipknot, Hatebreed, and more. August 17th at DTE Energy Music Theater. Tickets are on sale now at cc.com, palacenet.com, the Palace Box Office, and all Ticketmaster outlets. Or charge at 248-645-6666.
Get the best tickets first at ozfest.com. Brought to you by PlayStation 2. Live in your world, play in ours.
Brought to you by the Miller Lite Concert Series.
The entertainment event.
It's the weekend, and it's a new year, and the mortgage experts are still working. 2004, David Hall reporting for Rock Financial. The Rock Financial Mortgage Experts are in the office right now, ready to help you. We work 7 days a week, even Saturdays and Sundays. Are you looking to purchase a home or maybe refinance and need some expert advice? We can get you started today at 800-333-ROCK. Or go to rockfinancial.com and figure out what refinancing could save you every month on our mortgage calculators. We are Michigan's largest mortgage company and recently voted one of the top 13 best companies to work for in America. Call us today, 800-333-ROCK. That's 800-333-ROCK. And if you're in Novi, Canton, Auburn Hills, or Ann Arbor, you can visit a Rock Financial Mortgage Expert at our new Biltmore Properties locations. Stop in and see us. Call today, 800-333-ROCK. That's 800-333-ROCK.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender. Call the mortgage experts now, 800-333-ROCK.
WRIF presents the 3rd Annual Motor City Men's Expo, Saturday, March 13th from 11 till 6 at the Novi Expo Center.
Sponsored by Motor City Casino and Fox Sports Net.
Everything a man could want. Women, motorcycles, sports, beer, and me, the gunny.
That's right. Meet Arlie Ermey, star of Full Metal Jacket and the History Channel's Mail Call.
Be there, scumball.
See Cindy Margolis, number one downloaded girl from the internet. Playboy Playmates Miss June 2003, Taylor James, and August 2001, Jennifer Walcott.
Check out the Men's Expo Bikini Contest. Hit the Miller Lite Sports Lounge.
Plus so much more. The 2004 Motor City Men's Expo, Saturday, March 13th at the Novi Expo Center.
Brought to you in part by Miller Lite, the official beer sponsor of the Detroit Red Wings, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Napa Auto Parts, Tom Holzer Ford, and Limousine Express.
Admission is just $7.
Click on WRIF.com for discount admission coupons or show your Motor City Casino Club Metro card at the door and get $2 off.
The 2004 Motor City Men's Expo, Saturday, March 13th from 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. at the Novi Expo Center. Sponsored by Motor City Casino, Detroit's casino of choice. The best damn sports show period on Fox Sports Net and 101 WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Exactly midnight in the Motor City. Those of you listening all over the country, we just got a letter, an email, actually, from a listener in Tokyo, Japan. I don't even know what. I mean, it's like 6 a.m. tomorrow morning or something like that. Anyways, 313-298-WRIF. We're talking about Mel Gibson's The Passion. We're talking about gay marriage. We're talking about how we're not talking about the things that are going to dramatically affect our life, like the continuing erosion of the industrial base, wages going down, our tax dollars being stolen from us instead of being used to benefit our communities, going off to the Bush's pals that have destroyed Iraq and now are rebuilding it, on and on. By the way, I was talking about a nation and a culture swept by extreme nationalism, religious fanaticism, the scapegoating of minorities, and something that drives it all, this moral certitude that everything they believe, this is the right wing, this is the conservative, is so 100% assured that it has to be enforced by the political state. So there's always these great conflicts these people are starting. And this film by Mel Gibson, this social political conservative, is another example of it. I had a release from something called the American Life Lead. I'm sorry, the American Life League. And it says it recommends Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ and says that this ought to make people, it says here, you cannot be Catholic and pro-abortion. So the film's being used to try on people like John Kerry to leverage him into He says he's opposed to abortion, but he does not want laws against it. So the film is being manipulated or manipulatively used to erode a woman's right to choose. And always you find out, I'm going to do a show. Let me see if this is listed on here. Well, actually, I have to go to my website here. Hold on just a second. What's the name of this damn thing? Oh, yeah. Take them at their words. Startling, amusing, and baffling quotations from the Republicans and their friends. This is written by Bruce J. Miller, and he's going to be a guest, do one of our guest interviews. And there's like 360 pages of the most astounding, everything from mean-spirited to racist, sexist, homophobic, the worst you can imagine coming out of the people of this country. And it's centered out of the mouths of these Republicans and their supporters. Now, you put together one of liberals where people are making statements that are just jaw-dropping, that are just absolutely jaw-dropping to the point where that's so offensive to what is almost universally agreed upon, what are the decent precepts of a human community. Anyways, one of these guys, and it's typical, they're always involved in these sex scandals. You know, you got Clinton. I mean, he's like an exception. Most of all the sex scandals are always these right-wing, church-going, sanctimonious Republican politician. Politicians. Here's another one. An Oklahoma House Republican on Thursday was at the Oklahoma County Courthouse pleading not guilty to a felony sexual battery charge. Just turns out he's the author and chief sponsor of the Oklahoma Defense of Matrimony Act. Bill, he wants to, you know, they want to defend marriage. In the meantime, he's being accused of felony sexual battery. Not unusual in the least. All right, let me get to some of these emails here real quickly. This is from David writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Are we this stupid, he asks. Peter, the latest expert analysis from Tim Russert and some guests is that Democrats will lose to Bush because voters like the, quote, West Texas clarity that Bush delivers. You mean, there's a book called Bushisms, filled with a man that cannot put one word after another when he's trying to be sincere or compassionate or something like that. They went on to say that people will vote for Bush because he gives them simple with me or against me choices. And so David's asking, are we that stupid? The experts say the citizens don't want to hear debate. They say Bush is more seen as more honest than any Democrat. Can this can't be true, can it? I mean, I'm amazed. I mean, this man is a poster boy for the words mendacity and prevarication. That's lies. Do you think most people would rather have a lie if they don't have to think? Some will. It's the third of the people. You can fool some of the people all the time. All the people's, or some of the people, let me get that all right. You can fool all the people some of the time. Some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time. So the Republicans, the conservatives, the core of them, those are the people that some that you can fool all the time, and it's because they want to be fooled. But things do not look well for Bush. A Kerry and Edwards ticket right now is beating Bush and Cheney 50% to 42% of potential voters. Now, they haven't even begun to use the obscene war chest of over $120 million that the fundraiser in chief and all of his pals have been going around and raising from the corporate elite to maintain corporate rule in this country. All right. Oh, yeah. Let me see. There is some. Pardon me. Andrew writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The thing to remember that the average Jew, myself included, is not against the Mel Gibson movie itself, but rather the timing of its release and its presentation. During a time of massive right-wing sentiment in this country, a movie which has the potential to spark anti-Semitism is released. To make this worse, it is not framed in the life of Jesus as a whole, but in his last 24 hours. And, yeah, people wonder, well, gee, why are American Jews so paranoid about this film? It's just about our Lord. Well, in the Middle Ages and even into the 19th century, maybe even the 20th century, Jewish communities dreaded Easter, because that's when the crucifixion and resurrection story was told. And then after hearing these homilies about Christian love and all that, these mobs of enraged Christians would go and create these pogroms against their Jewish neighbors. So if they're a little touchy about it, you know, people that have lost millions of people to anti-Semitism within the memory of some living people, I think have a right to have a little touch of paranoia, don't you? All right, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's Elliot. I called, like a month ago or something like that before. And I just wanted to touch real quick on what you were saying about the gays. And, you know, I wanted to get into a couple of things, actually. But as far as the gays go, you know, I think, you know, as far as our society, you know, is concerned mainly, you know, if they're not hurting anybody... And I don't think they are, just by being in love and getting married. then what's the big deal? You know, and it's true what you say as far as, you know, most of the people that are getting on the gays about it are these really, you know, ultra-religious and, you know, types who are really just as screwed up as anybody else.
Sure.
But they believe that they're so much better, at least in my personal experience, that they're so much better because they believe, well, they're in good with God, you know.
Self-righteous is the word. Self-righteous. The other thing, too, I've repeated this a lot, the beat author, William Burroughs, talked about busybodies, people with no business of their own, then they butt into everybody else's. But I think I've said before, it's not even really accurate. I like his description. But really what it is, these are people that aren't taking care of their own business. And it deflects them from dealing with their own problems because they're looking out there and seeing all these awful, sinful people.
Right. I pray and I read the Bible. I'm fine. You know, I'm better than you are already. And as far as, you know, that, I guess, ties right into the, you know, with the movie The Passion of Christ. I think that one of the worst things that you could possibly talk about nowadays out in the open, it used to be politics and race. I think politics is so out in the open now as far as people talking about what they think, you know, on either side of the fence. It's kind of like race now. And for this, you know, talking about anti-Semitic, I haven't seen the film. I don't really have to see it. You know, if it's, I don't know, it's entertainment. And, it's like, I believe that, I don't know where I heard this before, but I heard that, you know, if the people are entertained, you can take their freedoms right out from under them. People are so into entertainment nowadays. Everywhere you turn, there's some form of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you look, TV, movies, you know, radio, you know, just anything, really. And that's why people are making such a huge deal out of this. It's a movie. Somebody made a movie. That's it. It's a movie. And, you know, I mean, other movies can be looked at as racist. People, Spike Lee got on Quentin Tarantino because he was using the N-word too much in his movies. So he was considering that, you know, anti-black, you know. It's just like a lot of other movies can be looked at this way. And it's,
well,
you know, who cares? It's entertainment. It has a certain message and, you know, but take it the way you want it, I guess. It's not really a...
I don't know how it's going to go over in general. I've heard people come out of these movies, and I was listening to a news show in Detroit, and somebody came out, and I think I said this earlier, that that the viewer said he saw in it a message of love, and it made him want to love his fellow humans even more. And I suspect that's the attitude the person went in with. And then I saw, this I think was in the paper, a woman was quoted as saying, "Now we know who killed Jesus." And I suspect she was probably an anti-Semite going in. But the cues in there, I mean, Joanne from Troy said that she didn't see anything anti-Semitic in it. Well, I haven't seen it, but every description of it certainly points in that direction.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Elliot. I appreciate your call. Now, this has got to be a joke. Warren writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Remember this guy called earlier and said there were two heart attacks in the showing that he saw? He says, "I saw it, and three people had heart attacks during the showing. I could barely stop myself from burning down a synagogue after." I don't know. What do you think, Rick? I think it's a joke. Yeah. All right. It's a joke. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How you doing? Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm not gay, but I wanted to comment on the gay marriage thing. You know, I mean, I'd like to see if we just tried, you know, just let that happen for 10 years or so to see what would, you know, be the difference between the track record of success rate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Between hetero and gay, and you know, because I just have a feeling that the gay would probably not be as volatile as the hetero ones seem to be today. You know.
Sure. Hey,
and,
you know. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. The other thing is, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of people when they talk about gay marriage, they say that, oh, why do they deserve special treatment? And I've never really understood that. I mean, I'm kind of amazed that they don't catch the irony in it when they say it, because if one group is allowed to do something and another group isn't,
mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that sort of special treatment for the people who are allowed to do it?
Sure.
You know, I mean, it just never made sense to me. So.
Well, you know, we had Bush, and these conservatives are saying that they don't want activist judges, they want to let the people decide. Well, it was illegal in many states in the in this country up until 1967, when finally the Supreme Court held that it was unconstitutional for states to have laws which banned marriage between African Americans and Caucasians. So up until 1967, in many southern states, they would not issue a license. If you were a black man and a white woman, or you know, the reverse, and you went into some county office in Alabama, and they'd say, "Sorry, our law says you cannot marry." And it's like an exact repeat of what we're seeing now out in San Francisco. So these conservatives, and of course the conservatives wanted to keep this. They opposed the court intervening in this because they said it was a state right to determine that people of different races could not marry. Well, I mean, that sounds so stupid to us now. But they took a poll, and nationally, the majority of American people agreed that blacks and whites should not be allowed to marry. Yet the so-called activist courts, fortunately, read the Constitution as they are charged by that document, and said this is clearly unequal protection under the law. And now, I mean, who thinks a bit about that?
Yeah.
I mean, except some whacked out racists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Well, I said to, was it Ron from Fort Wayne, Indiana? I said I thought it was preposterous that you know, his report that at the Grand Canyon it says that there was this biblical aging of it. You know, these fundamentalists say that everything's only, I don't know what it is, 5,000, 6,000 years old. And all the fossil record, you know, that shows that things are a million years old, God created that. God created fossils 7,000 years ago or something. So Roy from Placitas, Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is listening at WRIF.com. Now, this is a very important site, counterpunch.org. Counterpunch.org, it's by Jeffrey St. Clair. And he says, tourists at the federal park in northern Arizona will be greeted with scriptural passages affixed to park signs to help interpret the religious experience of gazing into God's mighty chasm. This autumn, Donald Murphy, deputy director of the National Park Service, ordered three bronze plaques featuring quotes from Psalms, and they named them, placed on viewing platforms on the south rim of the canyon. The plaques were made and donated by the Evangelical Sisterhood of Mary in Phoenix, who live in a convent called Canon in the Desert. The convent was founded in 1963, who visited the... I don't know. I mean, this is a secular nation. The reason that the very first amendment to the Constitution calls for the separation of church and state is because the founding fathers knew of the religious experiences of Europe. They knew when you intertwined religious belief, and particularly institutionalized churches, with the political state, it was terrible. One nation under God, Iran. One nation under God, Afghanistan, under the Taliban. And this is what we have here. This is what these people are. They are our American Taliban. They want to have their religious view of the world, everything about it, thrust in our face at all times. And these are really, I'm trying to think how to structure this. These aren't, they're really not right-wing Christians. They're really Christian right-wingers. And this Christian ideology is, it's just a convenient, I don't know what, the battering ram for their political agenda. Now, in 2001, I went down to what's called, it's no longer called this, but we still call it the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. There's a big protest there every November around Thanksgiving. And it's because this school that's financed by our tax dollars takes in these troops from these South American torture states and gives them military training. They used to teach them how to torture. They actually did. But they got such bad press, and they almost had their funding cut off by the U.S. Congress, that they cleaned up their act. They got a new name and everything like that. But they still, the troops that they train have this extraordinarily disproportionate rate of involvement in war crimes and you know, crimes against human rights. But this whole deal is run by people of faith. So your old pal Pete, the atheist, goes down there, right, with some of my friends. And these are Christian, mostly Christian peace and social justice activists. And the emphasis is on peace and social justice activists. Martin Sheen goes down there, a Catholic peace and social justice activist, you know, governor or president, what's his name on that West Wing? I don't know. I barely ever see it. Anyway, so he's always very prominent there, as are some other Christian movie stars that go down there. Now, and it's run by a Father Roy Bourgeois. I mean, this is his name, Father Roy Bourgeois. Very articulate. I've interviewed him before. And he spoke at the rally on Saturday. Never mentioned Jesus, never mentioned God. He spoke about the suffering, not of Jesus, but the suffering of the Colombian people at the hands of the graduates of the U.S. School of the Americas. He spoke about the grinding poverty of Central America and how the graduates of the School of America have contributed to that, and how they're essentially the gangsters, they're the enforcers for the gangsters that run those countries, and they get trained here by our tax dollars. And that's the suffering that Roy Bourgeois. And now I noticed Saturday night, there was a big tent set up. Hundreds and hundreds of people, usually about 10, 12, 15,000 people get down to these things. And I asked a friend of mine, I said, what's that? And I said, oh, they're holding Mass. These are Catholics. And they're trying to abolish the School of Americas, as was I. But they weren't rubbing this in our face. They knew that there were people of other faiths. They knew that there were atheists and agnostics. They know that there were Jews and Buddhists and Muslims. And so they understood, to them, the importance of a spiritually grounded life. And it wasn't that they were trying to thrust it into our face. All right. So I guess, Ron from Fort Wayne, I owe you an apology. Thanks, Roy, from Placitas, New Mexico. Both of you from listening from afar. Are we going to line four? Is that it? All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for taking the call.
Glad to.
Auburn Hills. Pleasure to speak with you again.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
My name is Eric.
Hi,
pleasure
Eric.
To speak with you again here.
Good.
I just wanted to share with you my experience. And maybe a quick comment, but first I have to correct you now.
Sure.
You made a comment earlier about the fundraiser in chief, and I think you were inaccurate. Last I heard, he had well over $150 million.
Oh, well.
At any rate.
And he, you know, isn't that all he does? Does he ever do anything political? I mean,
all they do.
Yeah, right.
Well, I just wanted to share with you my experience. I just went to see the movie here, The Passion of Christ, and I'm a Catholic, and my best friend is Jewish, and we went to see it together, and I'll just preface this by saying neither of us are extremely religious people. Those were the faith we were born into and brought up with, and I think I'm pretty well, as most of your listeners out there. At any rate, right, wrong, or indifferent, I found the effect, I can't even put into words. The movie got its point across, and I don't think that Mel Gibson's point was necessarily to throw religion into my face so much as it was to portray his interpretation of the suffering that, in his eyes, Jesus went through. If you can go into the movie accepting that and take everything else out of it, he got his point across. I personally, and granted, you know, being that we were both of different faiths, even as close as we are, it was a little bit difficult afterwards to really say anything because we were both moved, and we were both moved in different ways. And yet, to be honest with you, he did feel a little offended. And, you know, one of the comments that you'd mentioned, you didn't see the movie, but there were a few portions in the movie that even myself as a Catholic, I sat back and said, you know what? I was confirmed, and I studied this, and I don't exactly remember it happening this way. But I think that I can accept that there's also a certain amount of artistic license involved. And as far as people creating an anti-Semitic feeling from the movie, you hit the nail on the head earlier. I think this movie, what it really does is it reinforces, either positive or negative, whatever emotions that or feelings you may have had going into the movie to begin with. And if if that's what the movie set out to accomplish, I really think it really hit the nail on the head, because I didn't see one person walk out of that movie that wasn't either in a positive or negative way, and believe me, it was both ways.
I just did.
I really think in that respect,
yeah,
that he did a good job.
Well,
beyond that, you know,
I mean, in terms of it, in terms of its art, the fact that people found it almost excruciatingly painful to watch. I mean, I mean, they had seen somebody whip for 45 minutes with these scourges, you know, these lashes laced with glass and bone and skin flying off. And
slightly exaggerated.
The what?
I've noticed that a lot of that has been, shall we say, slightly exaggerated. It was definitely a graphic movie. To be honest with you, Peter, and this may sound sick, and maybe this is just I'm a product of today's society, I was expecting it to be a little bit worse. I mean, maybe that's just because I'm part of the Freddy Krueger generation.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be it. I mean, I've stayed away from films like that as well. And, yeah, I mean, some people have said that. I mean, look, we've got films out like Kill Bill, and, I mean, and we were talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, could be that it. You can always say the Freddy Krueger and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just fantasy. Obviously, this portrays itself as being one of the central stories of Western civilization, and carries with it an enormous amount of emotional baggage for everyone.
I would like to make one comment for the listeners out there, and again, myself being a Catholic, and you made this distinction earlier. In a couple of ways, right-wing Christian versus Christian right-winger. My thoughts are there, and maybe this is just because I live in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood and have Jewish friends. I find the exact opposite to be true. I find that there's just at the gym today is a perfect example. Quite the opposite. I find a lot of Jews that really found it, what's the opposite of anti-Semitic? I don't even know. But I almost myself felt a little bit on the defensive, and I'd like to just pass the message along that this is one person's interpretation, and not all Catholics and not all Christians may necessarily feel that way, and not all Catholics and Christians hate Jews. And I just, you know, the mess this whole thing has stirred up, you know, I almost feel like I'm walking on eggshells. And,
well, remember, that was one of the charges I was making against these right-wingers. They're always stirring up something that gets people arguing, and you could say, well, it's good for talk radio, but...
Well, sure is, that's for sure.
But, you know, this all this stuff is real authentic for me. I mean, I want to live in a peaceful society where we celebrate and recognize each other's... differences, not where...
I'll make a recommendation for you. Go buy a ticket to Along Came Polly and go sit through the movie. I think either way you'll be moved.
All right, thanks a lot.
Say have a good night.
All right, Eric, goodbye. What's I watched a film with a little bit of violence last night, an older film, Will Smith movie, Ali, about Muhammad Ali. A bit too long, I'd say. Here's what, actually, this mirrors what I remember from Pat from Downriver. I can't remember which of the cities, saying that that the story only works, the story of Jesus only works, right, if Jesus is crucified and then can be resurrected, if he can die for the sins of humanity, being a basically flawed race, right? You have to do that. The book by, what is it? I can't remember the name. Nicholas Kazantzakis, isn't that it? Is his first name Nicholas? It's called The Last Temptation of Christ. Christ marries. He wants to have a family and just live a life. He doesn't want to act out the script that is inherent in his mission. And he doesn't want, and Judas doesn't want to betray him, all of this. And then, I may be confusing a few different stories about all this, but Judas's betrayal is key to it all. I mean, if Judas doesn't betray Jesus, then there's not the crucifixion and there's not the redemption. So this all has to happen. So, video model, I think it says, the hype surrounding this movie reminds me of an old question from childhood. If Jesus had to die, why not just die of old age? Would the death from old age wash away sins any less than death at the hands of Rome and other skeptics in the Jewish community? Seems like that they're really saying, what they're really saying is Jesus had to be pornographically tortured for our sins. Had Jesus died from old age rather than pornographic torture, would we be the object of idolatry? What would be the object of idolatry? A rocking chair? I can see it now. The hallowed walls of chapels adorned with rocking chairs or the living room sofa. So, wait a minute. He's got another, I can't see this right. Regarding AWOL Bush's new diversion, the opponents of same-sex marriage are way behind their founding fathers. If they didn't think exclusive marriage was unconstitutional, they wouldn't be proposing changes to the Constitution. Oh, this is Paulie from Michigan. Sorry, I hope I didn't, sometimes I don't mean to give out people's email addresses. In any event, the story is, that's why the story doesn't interest me. I don't think it's the one I would choose if I was going to become religious. Paulie, because of the fall, we're basically flawed. We're all sinful, and only through this blood redemption, this blood sacrifice, can we be redeemed. Right? It's not my story, but that is the story, and it's one that predominates in Western culture. But there's huge pockets of people that don't buy it. Now we're getting into belief. All right, so I'll get into my little deal. The only thing I never understood is if God is omniscient, in other words, he's all-seeing, he knows everything. I mean, he has no limit to his powers. He knew this was all going to occur. Everything that Mel Gibson showed being done to his only begotten son that had to occur to redeem humanity was known in advance. In fact, when God creates Adam and Eve, he knows that that Eve is going to be tempted. In fact, tempted to the point where she succumbs. So if he knew all this was going to occur, why did he allow it to happen? I know, free will. But it's not really free will. If someone knows before they even have the thought that this experiment, or whatever you would call it, of initiating human life is going to end in exactly what has occurred, why bother?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
March 2004, David Hall reporting for the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Can you imagine having an interest rate under 3% fixed for 3 years? Well, you can with Rock Financial's exclusive new Smart Arm. Call today at 800-333-ROCK to find out the big difference the Smart Arm can make for you. Fix your rate for 3 years under 3%. And the best news? The highest the rate can ever go is lower than a lot of fixed rates. It's the flexibility of an adjustable with the security of a fixed. It's a win-win opportunity only from the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Find out the difference a little expert advice can make for you. Call 800-333-ROCK or visit us online at rockfinancial.com. 3 years under 3% and the security of a rate that's fixed. Rock Financial's exclusive Smart Arm. Call today, 800-333-ROCK.
Rate subject to market conditions, interest only for 3 years, APR 3.67. Points due at closing, some restrictions apply. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender. Call today, 800-333-ROCK.
The Metro Detroit Ford Dealers Monster Jam, brought to you by series sponsors Advance Auto Parts and Ford Trucks. March 13th. The Silver Dome with superstars Blue Thunder, Bounty Hunter, Scarlet Bandit, Monster Mud, Team Suzuki, Hot Wheels, Destroyer, Carl Malone's Power Forward, and for the first time ever, three world champions in one huge battle. Tom Mintz in Maximum Destruction, Dennis Anderson in Grave Digger, and Jim Kohler in Avenger. Get your tickets now at Ticketmaster, the Silver Dome box office, or charge it 248-645-6666. Or at Ticketmaster.com. Tickets subject to convenience and handling charges. All seats $2 more day of show. All seats reserved. See the trucks and meet the drivers. Grab your free pit pass with a Built Ford Tough. Party in the pits at your Metro Detroit Ford dealers. Pit party Saturday, March 13th, 3 to 5 p.m. Valid with event ticket only. Monster Jam, March 13th. The Silver Dome. Host Hotel Holiday Inn Select.
King Henry, why are you looking so sad?
My fourth wife is making my life miserable.
I was thinking of having her beheaded like I did the others, but these new women's rights groups are giving me a very hard time.
Today, there's a better way to end your marriage. Simply call Adam. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. Let Adam take the misery out of your divorce while they protect the rights of men.
Your Highness, the Queen requests an audience with you.
Okay, show her in.
Hello, Henry, my dear. I understand you've hired Adam to handle your divorce.
That's right.
Well, why don't you come up to my chamber tonight and perhaps we could bury the hatchet, hmm?
You don't have to lose your home, your children, or your money in a divorce. Call Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men. They answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call 248-356-ADAM.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. This is our final segment. At 1 o'clock, we're going to be talking. Now it'll be just me talking interviews with one about health care and what a disgraceful shape American health care is in with Al Colger. Al works with the PACE International Union. And then more corporate rip-offs, how these mega corporations throughout the world are trying to control the world's water systems. So Marie Mason from the Sweetwater Alliance, you can go to waterissweet.com, waterissweet.com. Now, this is from Shelby LaPree. Shelby LaPree runs radiopower.org. You can just go to radiopower.org. And she says, just a note to let you know we are now simulcasting your live stream every Sunday night, plus rebroadcasting it on Monday. Say hello to your new listeners on radiopower.org. Hi. And let me see, though. I wanted to get this, that it is rebroadcast at radiopower.org, 9 a.m. till noon on Mondays, and then 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Mondays. This is all Eastern time. So, Shelby, thank you so much for doing this. Also, that's one way to hear it. Another way to hear it is go to the archives. So you can go to whiterosesociety.org or cryingeagle.org. So the whiterosesociety.org or cryingeagle.org. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
It's so hard for me to disagree with you, because everything you say is, it's so refreshing to hear. I enjoy it so much, but there's just one thing. I want to talk about the Passion of Christ.
Sure.
And the French connection. You said earlier that the French have actually banned the movie, and stopping short of saying it, you implied that you agree with their policy of banning the Passion.
Well, no, I don't agree with banning hardly anything. Although, I'll tell you, a lot of countries, Canada and most of the European countries, have very, very strict laws about promoting any kind of material that has racial hatred in it. So, things that, for instance, you can publish and show in the United States, you can't do it, like in Canada or France or Italy, places like that.
Well, I mean, it's the right wing. It's people on the right. Those are the people that want to ban things.
Like sure.
Marriage and, well, gay marriage, and they want to ban abortion. And, you know, that it struck me, you know, kind of odd that you would say the French were right doing that, you know, because I...
No, what I said they were right about, the Iraq war.
Right, right. And then you drew the analogy that they're right about banning the passion.
It's easy to, on radio. I mean, see, one thing, if we're not sitting, you know, like in one of our living rooms or at a bar or something like that, and, you would say, wait a minute, are you just saying, you would say to me, wait a minute, are you saying that you agree with censorship? I'd say, no, that's not what I said. So it's easy to get, it could be on my part. I'm not being clear enough.
Right,
let me say this. Here in the United States, we have a Bill of Rights that says that Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of the press. It's not true in Canada. I mean, for instance, Nazis can write the most hideous, anti-black, anti-Semitic stuff imaginable, and they do. And they circulate. In fact, the United States is one of the premier printers of Nazi literature. If you possess that stuff in Germany, you can get arrested. If you try to import it into Canada, you can be arrested. So most.
I have the Turner Diaries is the name of the book. I bought that just because there was such a large, row about banning that book. And I bought it, and it's hideous. It's terrible, but it should be out there. It should be read, and in Germany you should not be arrested for that book. So right onto the Bill of Rights.
Okay.
I think we need everything, all ideas, all opinions, and when you start, I can hear a right wing wacko like Cheney or something saying that Noam Chomsky should be, banned, should be taken off the shelves because it promotes. Anti-Americanism, as
right.
They say, but no, they're not calling to ban it. And right when they do, I'll freak out, and that's why I'm calling you.
All right, I appreciate it. Always good to be clear about that. Thank you so much.
Right on.
All right, bye now. This is Peter Werby, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how you doing tonight?
Doing well, thanks.
Well, I heard your piece about the School of America's on earlier, and I had to call for a minute there. I didn't think I was going to make it through. But in 99 and part of 2000, I instructed class at the School of Americas. And it's interesting that you mentioned the protest that happens there.
Yeah.
That was the reason why I am no longer in the military.
Really? What do you mean?
It sounds ignorant for me to say, but while I was instructing... I mean, what I instructed is what you said that they used to do. They didn't stop. They renamed it. It's now called Combat Interrogation Technique and Intelligence Gathering Strategy.
That is no longer torture.
No, probably not as much as it used to be, but there are physical means of intelligence gathering that are taught at that school. And, I was off base the weekend of the protest, and I came back on Sunday. And I was going up to the front gate, and there's 15,000 people in my way. And I started talking to the Veterans for Peace, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Sure.
And they proceeded to inform me about all the horrible things that the people... that were coming out of the school were doing in their countries.
The graduates in South America and Central America, yeah.
And when they told me that Guatemala has the highest disappearance rate for people in the entire world,
mm-hmm.
and people just drop off of existence in this country, and when they told me that, and I had just finished a class probably a month and a half before that with four Guatemalans, that was... the big light in my head saying, I got to get out.
That's an absolutely amazing story. You can't just, it's not like a job, though. You can't just quit, can you?
I absolutely did. I was AWOL for 74 days, turned myself in, did a couple of pieces of paperwork, and they sent me home.
Wow. Have you been in touch with the School of the Americas Watch people?
Uh, No, I haven't actually. I've spent the last couple of years trying not to talk about it. Well, I don't want people that I'm on a day-to-day basis with knowing what I may or may not have been partially responsible for.
Well, I think that maybe the people in your daily life is one thing, but the people that run the School of the Americas Watch, as it's called, you can go to it's SOAW.org if you want to do that on your own.
Okay.
You know, I'm like you, probably just a tough Detroit boy, and I was down there, and the way, particularly since these people, even though I was saying earlier, they don't pump it filled with religious stuff, still it had this deep spiritual kind of quality to it. And one of the pageants that they had is that we marched in front of the gates, what you were talking about, and they beat this drum, and with each drum beat, they shouted out the name of a Salvadoran that had been massacred by School of the Americas graduates. And when they said his or her name, sometimes they were children, they said presente. In other words, that they were still present in the terms of the memory. By the time I can feel it coming up in me now. By the time I got to that gate, I was bawling my eyes out, and almost everybody was. It was an extraordinary...
I know exactly what you're talking about. I was less than 50 yards from the guy beating the drum.
Huh.
And, it was hard for me to even be in that crowd. Because if I was seen by anyone that knew me from the base,
yeah,
I'd have been arrested.
I got you.
Because I'm sure you know it's according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, it is illegal for any active military member to be part of an anti-military protest.
Right. Well, the only thing, and I'm being a little presumptuous here in making suggestions to you about how you lead your life and the choices you make, but the kind of conflicts that I can just catch in your voice in this story you're telling us, in many ways might be able to be resolved if at least looking at this site and understanding that that many people have points in their life where they make 180 degree turns. You know, during the Vietnam War era, they had the thing that John Kerry was part of, the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and every mass demonstration against another needless illegal war, the Vietnam War, was led first by active duty GIs, as you correctly indicate, was completely illegal. And they were the first people in line. And then the second line were the Vietnam veterans against the war. And by the way, those were the GIs that were spit upon, not people coming home, but that whole myth of GIs being spit on. Very frequently, these American Legion types would spit on the John Kerrys and the Ron Kovacs of the world. Anyways, it's SOAW.org. I mean, it's a good site for all of us to put. Maybe what I'll do? I'll even put that on as my featured website on my site. Well, listen, thank you for calling, and thank you for this call, and thank you for the decision you made.
Well, I'd like to thank you for the show that you put on, because that's really, I've been listening for years, and I've heard you mention it before, but tonight, when you mentioned the protest, I had to say something.
All right, well...
You provide a lot of useful information to people who might otherwise be ignorant.
Thank you again.
All right, thank you.
Bye now. This is from the website, SOAW.org. What is the SOA? The School of the Americas was renamed. It's left a trail of blood. Over its 56 years, the SOA has trained over 60,000 Latin American soldiers in counterinsurgency techniques, sniper training, commando and psychological warfare, military intelligence, and interrogation tactics. Among those targeted by SOA graduates are educators, union organizers, religious workers, student leaders, and others who work for the rights of the poor. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, massacred, and forced into refuge by those trained at the School of the Assassins, as they call it. And this is our tax dollars at work at Fort Benning. Yeah, I think I will. When you start talking about that trail of blood, that trail of tears, maybe that deserves to be my featured website. That's at peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. All right, are we at line three, Rick Fox? Are you working tonight? You rocking? All right. We'll have a couple of interviews, and then Rick Fox rocks all night long. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for being here.
I'm talking about passion.
Sure.
Just before, I heard a guy say that it was very disgusting and very gory. I've studied into this quite a bit, and crucifixion was not a pretty thing.
No.
You had huge spikes driven through your hands, your feet, and you were hung up on basically a huge pike. And, you know, if he's portraying, I haven't personally seen the movie, mind you, if he's portraying this accurately, it's going to be pretty gruesome. And anybody who's going to see this movie should be aware of this. Like you said, it's portraying his last 24 hours and all that. Another point in there.
Well, nobody's going to get any surprise, but, you know, a lot of movies have been horrific. And you know, I mean, partly led by my wife, who just, you know, she says she doesn't want to see violent images, thinks all those, and I agree, are imprinted on our memory, and why go to see those? So I've really seen very few of those type of movies, very violent movies in my life. Like, I never saw the Silence of the Lamb or any of that stuff, but it's kind of weird. I mean, that now those things have almost approached humor.
Yeah. Another point in there was the anti-Semitism.
Uh-huh.
This story is based on the Bible, and if you even read old history documents, it says that the Jews did put him to death. I'm not anti-Semitic. I have plenty of Jewish friends. But they did put him to death. He was a Jew. His own people put him to death, or at least the religious leaders of that community did.
Well, there is a difference. I mean, I said last week, just as probably 90% of Afghans had no idea that the World Trade Center had been bombed, probably 99% of the people in Afghanistan didn't even know there was buildings called the World Trade Center. In the same manner, it's since they're that Pontius Pilate, contrary to the way that Gibson portrays him in The Passion, was this ruthless, vicious Roman proconsul, governor of Palestine, and had put thousands of people to death by crucifixion. The vast majority of Jewish people had no idea this was even going on. He offended the religious establishment, according to the story. And yet, in some of the biblical accounts, there's this blood guilt. Now, the blood guilt goes throughout Catholic history, through the Middle Ages, where repeatedly attacks by the Christian faithful were made upon the Jewish communities. When the Crusades were taking place in the 12th century, these fervent mobs called crusaders off to slaughter people in, you know, the Arabs in the Middle East, they would stop off and kill a lot of their own Jews. They're saying, well, hey, we're going to kill the infidels. Why don't we kill a few Jews while we're, you know, on the way? And also, I was saying earlier that the passion of Easter was something dreaded each year by Jewish communities because this is what often set these mobs off. So the idea and the fear and the concern about anti-Semitism is real.
Yeah. My main point in that was is I'm not going to go out and blame Jews nowadays for the exact same reason you said. A lot of them, not only was it how many hundreds of years ago? A
couple thousand.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like this is 2004.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and blame any people that I know today for crucifying Jesus.
It's beyond foolish. It's nuts, and it's also a blood libel. Here is the clue. There's two clues to Gibson's fix on all this. Now, people say, well, just because his father is a Holocaust denier and puts forth these preposterous charges against that Jews are trying to take over the world, which is one of the fundamental beliefs of Nazis. So he tells, like, Diane Sawyer, he loves his father, he himself believes in the Holocaust, and don't even go there, Diane, or whatever he said. Still, he's got a father. that is the core wacko anti-Semite. And he goes, for his account of the Passion, for the crucifixion, to the works of a 19th century anti-Semitic nun, and he himself is what he calls a traditionalist Catholic, and is out of sync with Vatican II that absolved the Jews. Isn't that nice of him to say, you know, absolve the Jews of this blood guilt that they killed Christ? I mean, so, you know, it's not real convincing on his part. Now, I got to grab one more call real quickly. Thank you for yours. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
This is Sean. I'm from Sarnia.
Hi, Sean.
I want to talk to you about kind of Christianity in general.
Sure.
I feel you're painting Christians in a bad light tonight.
Some of my best friends? No, they're not. Go ahead.
Well, in general, Christians are supposed to be loving. They're not all the ones who say, I'm better than you because I believe this and this. And a couple callers back who were saying the Passion was disgusting and such.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe they really looked into it. I don't think they took the time to study what all exactly went into a crucifixion. Because, like, especially before it, when they beat Jesus.
Yeah.
Flogging was, by the time they're done, you'd have basically skin flaps falling off your back, you know?
Well, and a lot of that apparently is in the movie, but why would anybody want to present that? And I guess, you know, I mean, I think Gibson's kind of a twisted character. Why would anybody want to see that?
I think it's kind of to prove a point that Jesus stooped to the lowest of the low, because at the time, and still now, I guess, crucifixion was the lowest form of humility for any sort of person.
Humiliation. But so what then does one take out of it? I mean, what does the viewer then gain by seeing this hideous torture?
Literally, the passion of the Christ.
Hmm. Well, okay, it's nothing I want to see, but go ahead. All right, I got to end the show. Thank you. Just one quick, we'll end it on a irreverent, even blasphemous note from James listening in Kenosha, Wisconsin, writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Considering the omniscience of the Creator, the all-seeing, the Passion is nothing more than a tale of the ultimate in parental abuse. Oh, that's cold. Well, James, you and I will be sharing the hottest room in hell. Back with a couple of interesting interviews after the...
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Group. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
WRIF.com. More Riff Rock is coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What a great time talking to Billy Bob Thornton about his new movie, Bad Santa.
And you brought anal sex into the mainstream.
Well, I do what I can for the cause.
I like the idea that not only have you brought that into the mainstream, but it's on fat chicks as well.
That's right.
Okay, so who's PO'd about the movie? Somebody's got to be bitching about it.
They got to stir up controversy about everything. All of a sudden, it's like, it's a Santa Claus movie, and he's like cursing, and it's not about Santa Claus, it's about a con artist.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
I have to tell you, I appreciated John Ritter, but I didn't realize he had as much range as he had until you worked with him.
I was really proud of the fact that I got to put him in a movie that showed him as an actor.
What was his famous line? Was it, we're going to have to bleep this, he said, stick, was that it?
Yeah. I also like the part where he says, he's talking about what he heard, overheard at the big and tall. And he can't even say the word. He spells it.
Oh, yeah, about another anal sex reference.
That's right.
I ain't listening to you no more.
Stop it!
True.
That sounds good.
And Mike. In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rick.
Hey, Rick!
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like McVee's on Telegraph Road in Southfield. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We got some great celebrity phone numbers. We had to try them. First, we called the 49ers' Terrell Owens, and then Brian Urlacher's girlfriend, Paris Hilton.
You have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of...
8-1.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
Yo, this is Jeff Garcia. I just want to say how nice it was to have a little cry with you the other day. It was real nice seeing you cried, too, because then I knew you cared. I love you. Bye, T.O. Giving him rides
before. Hey, it's Paris. My screen is broken on my phone, so therefore I cannot read any of the numbers on it. So make sure to leave a number with the message, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Paris. It's 54 here. Big Brian. You're thinking about putting it in your butt. Boom! When we say pH, how about a big 5-4? Up the old eight. Yeah, I was thinking of running a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
Hey, Riff!
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We did a Harris poll asking people named Harris if, in fact, they were uncomfortable talking about their reproductive organs, which is what a latest study said.
Is it a difficult subject matter, though?
Not with
oxygen. Okay. So if you had, say, a 2-inch by 2-inch cyst on your testicle or something like that, you would not have a problem going over that with your doctor. And how about maybe just an oozing pussy sore on your a shaft of your penis, say, for example?
He is an international representative with the PACE International Union, and we're going to talk about the issues having to do with health care. Al Kogler, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Well, this is amazing. I mean, how do we even get a handle of how many people are without health care? You hear 30 million, you hear 45 million, you hear 70 million. What are the figures, and how can we get some sense of accuracy?
Well, the agencies that track these kind of numbers tell us that currently 45 million people are out of the system, are without health care, meaning that they're without insurance coverage, because most insurance coverage is job-related, and because people go through cycles of seasonal work and layoff in this current economy, those numbers are often up to 70 million at any given time. Peter, it's really amazing that you'd start this with a description of prescription drug coverage, because even though many of us work in environments where we have really good coverage, I have a son that is 27 years old, finishing up as a student, ineligible to remain on my insurance coverage, has Crohn's disease, and is subject to about $400 a month prescription drug cost if he were to pay for his prescription drugs that he needs every month to prevent reoccurrences and flare-ups of his disease. He can buy those same drugs for $147 across the river in Canada. So this is a problem that touches every single one of us in the U.S. And it doesn't skip over the people that have good coverage themselves, because we all have friends, family members, neighbors that are in that 45 million to 70 million uninsured.
Well, someone once said, once you start getting into the millions, when you're counting, it almost becomes irrelevant. In other words, if someone says, oh, 70 million is way exaggerated, all right, only 45 million people in our community, in our neighborhood, in our state, in our country, are not getting either any medical care, or it's astounding that someone would have, like, high blood pressure and then cut back on their meds in order to not have to pay the extraordinary amount. You know, let me just tell you a real quick story. I was standing in line at a drugstore to pick up some medicine, and through my insurance, I have to pay, like, $10 copay. And in back of me, there was an elderly couple, and you know, she said, like, $10, and I said, here. And then I was still putting stuff together, and they said to them, $334. And they started, taking out this cash and counting it in 20s and 10s and 5s. I almost cried.
I can empathize entirely. It's the same story, only different people. The fact of the matter is, in some way, shape, or form, we pay for the health care, whether it's prescription drugs or health care, of everybody anyway, because we do live in a country that requires that people don't go without treatment. The unfortunate reality is we also support a system that requires people or encourages people to wait until they absolutely have to have care, when their medical care costs are at the highest amount, before they get that care. The only way I see that we can really make judgments about the millions of dollars it costs and the effectiveness of our current healthcare delivery system is by evaluating the gross domestic product numbers that we in the U.S. generate versus the rest of the world. And when you take a look at what percentage of gross domestic product health care is in the U.S. versus Canada, England, Sweden, Germany, France, and the rest of the similar industrial democracies to the U.S., we pay more and we have much worse outcomes being judged by things like infant mortality. The infant mortality rate in this country is abhorrent. We should be ashamed of ourselves.
Number 42 we are in the world.
In the world.
41 other countries have a lower infant mortality rate, which means death of infants that before 1 year of age. And in some, I mean, that's a little distorted because there are some urban inner city areas that have infant mortality rates around 15 and 16 per 1,000 live births, whereas the overall, I think, for the United States is like 7. So it's over double in some areas that puts us alongside of Cambodia or, someplace like that.
Exactly the point. The when we start talking about the countries I named a couple of minutes ago, that's the top five or six. But when you think we're 42, and you start thinking who actually can be 39, 40, and 41, they're very small, typically impoverished, not industrial countries.
Well, Al Kolger, tell me, there's been some progress. I know that conservatives and the medical establishment invented the phrase socialized medicine way back probably as long ago as the 50s to scare anybody off to think that we ought to have a national health program like every other industrial country does. And yet now you begin to hear, beginning with the Clintons, but now into the 2004 presidential election cycle, people are actually talking about the problems of health care. I mean, do you think we're advancing some, at least in the realm of ideas?
I think we're advancing a lot because in the current electoral cycle, this is probably the first or second most talked about issue. Jobs and health care should be the issues that we force all the candidates to talk about. But for the first time in 10 years, there is actual, real, useful discussion about a national health insurance system. And Peter, I think that you're right. The conservatives, and not just the conservatives, but the vested interest that get a lot of money in their election campaigns from the pharmaceutical companies, the drug companies, and the insurance companies, all would like us to consider this socialized medicine because that is such a weighted expression in U.S. history. In fact, this isn't socialized medicine in that the hospitals, the doctors, the clinics, the providers all operate in a market delivery system. The thing that is somewhat socialized is the way we pay for it. And what I'm advocating for is that everybody in the U.S. gets their medical care the same way every one of our elected officials does, and that is a tax-based system that would, in fact, save 95% of the people money and would be funded by a payroll tax that would save most of the employers that already provide decent health care coverage money.
Really?
But it would require that employers like Walmarts and other of the fast-growing economy that don't provide health care to also participate.
Well, I can. We operate so much off of just buzz phrases and what have you. And you just said by an employee tax. People say, "Well, there they go, those liberals, tax and spend." There's Wirby's got a guest on, just thinking how to take more money out of my already heavily taxed salary.
Well, this would not be a salary tax. This would be an employee payroll tax. And, in fact, it would save particularly industrial employers an awful lot of money. One of the numbers that we use in this discussion is, or one of the ways we try to characterize it, is how much cost does the automobile industry have to pass on in the cost of a new car. That cost is between $1,000 and $1,200 by the most recent analysis that has to be attached to the price of an Impala, for example, that's built in the U.S. versus a similarly outfitted automobile built in Canada or Japan or the rest of the world. So that's an unfair disadvantage that industrial employers have to shoulder too.
Now, we've mentioned a couple times it. Now, maybe we should give it a name. You're talking about a particular plan that your union PACE is advocating, and also the Labor Party of the United States. Begin by telling us, Alan Colger, that what PACE is, what your union initials stand for.
Well, I'm on staff with the Paper Allied Industrial Chemical and Energy Workers Union. In 1999, my predecessor union, which was the Oil Chemical Atomic Workers, entered into a merger with the United Paper Workers International Union, and we've re-identified ourselves as PACE. PACE advocates for just health care, which is a national, universal, single-payer funded health care delivery system. It essentially requires that everybody, rich, poor, urban, rural, young, and old, would all be participants in the same insurance system. And, you know, the whole concept of insurance is that you get favorable outcomes by putting everybody into the same risk pool. And that's what we're really talking about.
Now, we began, at least I did, by talking about prescription drugs and how almost two-thirds of people surveyed said the government should make it easier to buy cheaper drugs from Canada or other countries. What is at issue here, and how, frame this somewhat for us. I mean, we can go to Canada. We're just about 9 miles from Canada and could save ourselves almost, in some cases, 75% of drug costs. What are the issues here, and who's artificially keeping the price of drugs up? And aren't these guys always talking about free market? Well, this sounds like the farthest thing from that.
Well, the price of pharmaceuticals in this country is an extremely lucrative business. In some evaluations, we're seeing 2 to 3,000% profit in the price of prescription drugs that everybody has to take in order to maintain their wellness. That's just not acceptable. And the difference between buying those drugs in Canada and the U.S. Takes out a substantial amount of that profit, but it doesn't take out all the profit. I mean, the companies are, in this economy, expected to make a profit in order to survive. That's the deal. We're not opposed to that, but the profit should be fair, and it should be somewhat in line with what the same type of business experiences in other industrial democracies.
Well, I guess my question more was, why are they one price, a higher price, in the country that manufactures them, and a lower price if you just drive 9 miles south of here in a country that imports them?
Other than the fact that the industry and the economy that we're talking about is the biggest economic sector in the country today, Peter, the difference is because they can, not because they need to. I think the difference is because they have the political power to demand that kind of profit.
Now, let's look a little at what is possible, because as we were just mentioning, now with the presidential election on the boards, that some of the candidates have been talking about a universal health care program. And the one that PACE and the Labor Party is promoting is called Just Health Care. And we had the Clinton plan. Is it going to be anything like that?
Well, going back to the early 90s, There was the same kind of discussion that's happening today. The prices were rampant. They weren't as offensive as medical care and insurance costs are today, but they were rampant, and it had energized a similar movement in favor of health care reform. At that time, many of our congresspeople and senators were having discussions with activists like myself. That was when I first got involved in this issue. And at that time also, most of the people were advocating for a single-payer method of funding health care. The Clinton plan actually, in my opinion, was a plan to preserve the status quo. And instead of duplicating what everybody else around the world seems to do fairly successfully, a group of insurance company and think tank folks got together in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and came up with what we came to know then as managed care. Managed care worked for a while because it found some economies of scale to cut out of the cost of health care. But as soon as the movement for health care reform dwindled and people tried to learn to exist in the new managed care mode, there was less pressure to keep costs low, and 4 or 5 years ago, the costs that were escalating in 90 and 91 started to escalate, and now we're seeing 15 to 20% increases in health care costs.
Listen to the Peter Werbe Show. Al Kolger is an international representative of the PACE International Union. We're talking about health care. And Al, a couple of times you've mentioned, and I think I have as well, about how the health programs in other countries have worked, the universal single-payer system. And yet many people think it doesn't work, that you've got to wait in endless lines, you can't get operations, that the doctors don't want to participate. So there is a sense, I think among many people, that actually that these government health care programs don't work, and we Americans are much better off because we have our own private doctors.
Well, I agree. I think the most difficult issue is creating the political will and educating people and creating a comfort level with people that would increase the groundswell of demand for a fairer, more cost-effective means of delivering health care. In 1992, my union, which was then the Oil, Chemical, Atomic Workers, did an educational exercise that I would like to replicate again today. And that exercise was, we took busloads of people from bordering U.S. cities into Canadian cities. In Detroit, we visited, I believe, 7 healthcare delivery systems in Windsor. We took about 400 OCAW members and friends and family and guests, and we visited those clinics. We talked to the patients. We talked to the doctors. We talked to the nurses. We talked to the general public, and we found that very different than we experience here, that there is a high level of satisfaction with the outcomes of their system. There is a high level of satisfaction with the way they fund their system. People don't typically worry in the U.S. about what's going to happen when I get old and I can't take care of myself, because their system provides for long-term care. People don't worry about does my kid have a 102-degree temperature? Could I wait till it's 103 degrees before I take him to the clinic because I'm a little short in my paycheck this week? So I think if people had a dialogue with working people across the river, I think that that would be one method of overcoming this barrage of misinformation that the Canadian system has long lines and doesn't deliver care in a timely way, and that people die waiting. It just doesn't happen.
By the way, I should have mentioned this earlier. You can go to the Just Healthcare website. It's justhealthcare.org. Now, a new program of a new government program that would fund health care, I mean, I hate to say it, doesn't seem real probable now that we've entered this period of rampant debt that's been run off by destroying the tax base by taking by giving so many tax breaks to the wealthy and what have you, fighting wars all around the world. I mean, as it is, schools are closing, roads aren't being dealt with, the city of Detroit has a deficit, the state of Michigan has a deficit, along with the United States. Where in the world would the money come from?
Well, Peter, I think that just health care is part and parcel of all those things you mentioned. I think we are entitled to health care in this country. I think we are entitled to a job in this country. I believe we are entitled to a social safety net, and there's only one entity that's able to provide it, and that is government funding. We couldn't have built our roads all over this country if they weren't funded as a national priority. We should prioritize our citizens' health care with the same intention.
Well, I agree, but I don't think that answers the question. In a country that is credit cards are maxed out in terms of government spending, how can we institute another large program? I mean, I would like to see turning around in terms of the spending priorities where our tax money goes, but can we have the old thing of guns, which seems to dominate the Bush administration's view of the world, and butter, that is health care programs? I don't think so.
Well, I respectfully disagree with that. I think in this country we have the capacity for a thriving economy. We have energetic, fairly well-trained workforce for the existing jobs and jobs into the future if we have the political will to do that. We have the natural resources. We have the climate for a strong agriculture. We could do all those things. It just doesn't put as much profit in a few people's pockets as the things that we're doing now.
Let me, just before we run out of time, I mean, I doubt if your union, other people that are involved in trying to bring about a universal health care program, are waiting for the politicians, many of who are being paid by the pharmaceutical companies and the medical industry. So tell me about some of the work that's going on at the grassroots.
Well, there's a number of good things happening. Recently, we PACE and a number of other unions, including Teamsters Local and the Unite Midwest Joint Council and United Electrical Workers and others, just completed a training of 250 Midwest healthcare activists in Chicago. We are also working with the Central Labor Council, the Detroit AFL-CIO, and a number of other local interfaith organizations. Jobs with Justice nationally is sponsoring Healthcare Action Day on March 4th. We and the Labor Party are continuing to educate and inform and build around what we call a Committee of 1 Million, which is an organizing model to familiarize people with the issues so that they feel comfortable to go out and talk to workers in their work sites, family members and friends, and help to create the political will that it's going to take to make the kind of change that we're talking about here. It's going to be difficult because, you're right, we don't have an awful lot of resources. We don't have the same capacity to run the Harry and Louise type ads that were so pervasive the last time we had this national discussion.
Well, it sounds like I'm always reminded of that bumper sticker that says, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. And so this isn't going to happen without a real grassroots push.
Well, that's right, Peter. The example that I go back to time and again that I lived through in my union was in the early 1970s, under the Nixon administration, notoriously not friendly to labor, we were able to force the adoption of the OSHA bill.
Well, thank you so much, Al Colger from PACE International Union. 45 to 70 million people without health care ain't good. If you want more information, you can go to justhealthcare.org. It'll also be on my website at peterwerby.com. Al Colger, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Peter.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed.
from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling this guy, got this woman, and she made the mistake of hanging up on us.
Why'd you hang up?
I have company and I am busy.
Oh, well, you say usually when people hang up, I don't know if you're new, if you just get citizenship, usually people say goodbye before they hang up the telephone.
I told you I had to go.
I remember you were laughing about the erection, but...
No, I said I had to go, I'm hanging up. Goodbye.
People, say goodbye.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah, okay.
She didn't have any company. What is she talking about?
Company.
Liar.
Yeah, I know. People lie on a...
Let's call back and say we're a caterer. And there's nobody over here, they'll say, liar!
Let me tell you what's really going to happen. You're going to call up as a so-called caterer, and she's going to be, I just talked to you, I said goodbye.
You never know.
If it's in Vegas as a bet, I'm not so sure I'm going to put any money on this.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm looking for you, dear sir. This is a caterer. You having a party over there?
Not today.
By God.
You lied. You said you had company, lady.
I have company, but I don't have a party going on.
That's hilarious.
You lied.
You lied.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
That is.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Twice
is nice.
Super Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Super Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff Rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Super Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Super Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
It really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
The Motor City's best rock station.
An item that interested me, and it's called A Fluid Approach. What does 8 cups of water a day do for your digestive system? It's a whole thing about this debate about how many glasses of water should we drink a day? Like 8. And this article says you should always keep water right near you. And I guess if anything in this world that we could take for granted is that the availability of water. And you just turn on the tap and there it is, no matter what our circumstances are in life. And many of us, no matter where we are, where we've traveled on the planet, you could always just take a glass of water, open the tap, and there it is. But things are getting pretty interesting around the issues of water. And joining me is Marie Mason. She's an organizer for the Michigan-based Sweetwater Alliance. The Sweetwater Alliance is concerned with privatization of water and essential services, and we'll talk about what that means. Marie Mason, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on here.
Maybe explain all this, the privatization of water. I mean, we almost don't think, I mean, we know we have to pay our water bill every month, but we pay that to the city of, you know, fill in the blank. So what are the issues revolving around privatization of water?
Well, first of all, Peter, I think your comment about paying the bill is probably the central issue in the whole water debate. For thousands and thousands of years, water was something that was shared, something that belonged to everyone, human and non-human community alike, shared in this essential need for water. And what we have found is with the encroachment of corporates into every facet of life, that in addition to patenting the the basic food groups, mm-hmm. As if rice could be owned by any particular company, they have come into the realm of what it is that we need to live, and they have come into controlling and creating profit out of the use of water.
Flesh out the they a little.
Absolutely. Peter, it's actually, this is not one of those things that the right always likes to sort of lambast folks who are working for change, that there's an invisible they. These people actually have names, they have addresses, and there's very few of them. There's only three major water companies in the world, RWE, Thames, and Suez Degremont, which is also known as United Waters here in the United States. These three corporations and their millions of subsidiaries have taken over a brand new market that they've created. And the water market is both in municipal water, the water that you're talking about, tap water,
sure.
and also in the groundwater, which is really something that's more of an issue for developing countries, because they don't have tap water. They don't have water service that comes into the homes. People go and walk to shared water sources and, you know, dip in a bucket or a kum in India, the great big earthen pot, or some device for carrying water away. Now we have situations where Coca-Cola Company and other water mining companies have set armed guards on these shared water supplies and shoot people if they try and take, quote unquote, their water. So water has become a property rather than a shared resource, if you will.
This is not in this country, though.
In this country, actually, what we have seen with the water mining is in situations like in Michigan, up in Stanwood, Michigan, we have a corporation, Nestle's, which everybody knows and hates as probably the second, I think it's either the second or the first major distributor of all food products, has been involved in major, major evil corporate scams in other countries, i.e. getting women not to breastfeed so that they'll buy their formula. And then, of course, the economics of that are that when you're out of money, then baby has no food, as opposed to if you're relying on breast milk, you have it.
So Nestle is here in Michigan, Stanwood, Michigan.
Nestle is here in Michigan. It is also heavily lobbying in India and other developing countries to break open these markets for groundwater and also for dumping of products that are less than standard for European markets and United States markets.
You're talking about mining water, though. Essentially, like Nestle owns Ice Mountain, right?
Right. Nestle owns Ice Mountain, which is also subsidiary of Perrier. Oftentimes these corporations kind of use that changing sign in the front to confuse people, but it really comes down to very few corporations owning more and more of the world.
Well, I've always said we're going to wind up with one big corporation, no countries. It was going to be called International General.
Mm-hmm.
But be that what it may, so this big multinational is here in Michigan. It's pumping water out of a fresh spring, is it? And filling up plastic bottles, and you and I drink them. What's the problem? There's jobs, there's investment,
well, we get good water.
Yeah,
that's the line that they give you, is all about the jobs thing. First of all, the facility in Stanwood is what they call a black box facility. It can run with about three or four people working in the lab, just testing from time to time whatever it is that they ask them to test. They have no requirements similar to municipal water to test the water every hour and make sure that it's clean or make sure that it's palatable. What we see with Ice Mountain is they came in, they paid an $85 pumping permit, very similar as if you or I decided on a whim we were going to just put a well in our backyard. We'd pay an $85 permit to the state to be permitted for that. What they're doing is they're actually pumping at such a rate they're creating what's called a cone of depression. They're pulling water down far faster than it can be recharged through the system. The recharge on the aquifer that they're pumping from is about 100 years. So in essence, that's a negligible recharge.
Sure.
This aquifer is hugely important to creating a base that over time feeds out into the Great Lakes through the Little Manistee River. There's a group of people, Michigan Citizens for Water Conservation, that took Ice Mountain to court. Over, basically, it was a very simple case for them. They were saying, our water rights are being denied. We're losing our water, we're losing our wells, the water's dropping, our quality of life is going down, the fish are dying, et cetera, et cetera. They went to court in front of a gentleman, Judge Root, who has now come down with two opinions stating that this is illegal, it's a violation of riparian rights. This is all very long established law about water usage. But what Nestle, i.e. Ice Mountain, is pushing is this sort of new corporate mentality that's come out of the World Trade Agreements, and that is, if something can be made a commodity, it should be made a commodity, that there should be no barriers to the free trade of that commodity, including no environmental considerations, no local democratic control over that quote-unquote commodity. And what they're saying is that water, the basis of all life as we know it, is only a commodity, the same as a Nike tennis shoe, and that they can control it.
Let me I love to say this. I always say, let me play the devil's advocate, because many of my listeners think I am to begin with. But since this hasn't really risen too high, although I've seen stuff in the newspapers about it, particularly the court decision, why isn't this a tempest in a teapot? I mean, it's localized. Okay, you got an aquifer that, you know, that probably in the great scheme of things, the Great Lakes doesn't amount to much. You're which way? That's shaking your head, right? That means no. I you're doing a wonderful job. I want you to, you know, fill out why that we should be concerned about it, other than it just be, you know, a little bit of water here and there. We're here in the Great Lakes, we're surrounded by water.
We are, Peter, and I think that's one of the things that people don't understand. We live in a very water-rich environment, as opposed to people who are fighting right now for water in water scarcity areas. The trouble is that the environment, the ecosystem, doesn't operate like a grocery store. There's nothing where, well, you have a whole lot of something, so therefore you could part with some of it. Our entire ecosystem depends on being water abundant. All of the types of fish that we have living in our lakes and streams, the types of plant life that we have, all of them, this whole area should be a wetlands. And we have been draining it away for land development. We've been draining it away now for groundwater mining. That's one issue in terms of its damage to the ecosystem, which is very real and very pressing, and also not necessarily possible to remediate once that damage has been done. That's one issue. The second issue is sort of the legal precedent that this sets. This is very important. Most of these international corporations, the three main ones that I mentioned to you about the municipal,
and also
the groundwater mining corporations, and those are corporations that produce other things that we think about, like Coca-Cola Company, Pepsi, Nestle's. We don't think of them in terms of water, but the production of bottled water has become a brand new, very lucrative market, and they have really set their sights on North America as being water abundant, very ambiguous in our legislation that protects our water resources, and also, the most important factor, politically apathetic. What they have found in other countries is when they walked in and they said, aha, we're going to take all the water out of this area, and if you need water, you're going to have to pay for it. In a cultural setting when people had not been paying for water, people assumed that water would be shared, whatever amount that there was. They're walking into the U.S. seeing abundant water supplies, a fairly affluent market that could buy bottled water. I mean, you can't go to a sporting event now without somebody walking by with a bottle of water. And then lastly, a very politically polite group of people, unlike in Cochabamba, Bolivia, where they threw them out and burned down their buildings. What we have here is we've had a couple of court cases where we've taken Ice Mountain to court. We've had some polite public hearings where we've complained about the situation of privatization of our municipal water, but certainly nothing that would bother a corporate mentality.
Marie Mason is my guest on the Peter Werby Show, and she's a representative and an organizer with the Sweetwater Alliance, based here in Michigan, and they're concerned with privatization of water and essential services. Now, I know there's been a big fight against the privatization of water all across the United States. The Sweetwater Alliance here in Michigan is part of that, but even still, with municipally owned water, there's all sorts of shutoffs. I mean, I wonder if you could speak a little about that and give us some numbers to tell us the scope of the problem.
Absolutely. I think it's a little bit difficult with the numbers because they are changing. Right now, currently, about 70% of our municipal water systems in the United States are publicly owned, and that's a good thing. That means that they're locally controlled and there's some democratic input into what's going on with them. That doesn't mean they're perfect, but it just means that there's some possibility for change. What is beginning to happen is outsourcing with those markets, with those municipal systems. In the instance of Atlanta, Georgia, United Waters came in, bid on a contract saying, we can do it better, we can do it cheaper. They ended up doing cost overruns for several years, for about 3 years, cost overruns, and cutting people off from service. People would turn on the tap and brown water would come out. It was because they were doing what's called full cost recovery. It is the ultimate corporate attack on a public service. They try to bleed as much profit out of the system to the detriment of the public, to the detriment of the system, and then they abandon the project after they've taken everything out of it. Then the public is sort of left holding the bag to put money into it, pour money into it, to create a workable system again.
And there's thousands of people, though, that have been cut off from municipal water here in the Detroit area.
I can speak to the Detroit area. These are the numbers that we were given, is that during the year of 2003, this was an emergency city council meeting, we were told that some 40,000 people had been put in shutoff by the Detroit Water and Sewer Department.
40,000 people or 40,000 accounts?
Actually, you're right. It's 40,000 accounts.
Wow, so that's a lot of people.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you have households that are multiple families that are living in households. What we did manage to chase down for this year is that the numbers have increased, that we have 80,000 people in the Detroit metropolitan area who are facing shutoff or are in shutoff.
So that could, if we started thinking of families of 2 and 3 and 4 and 5...
Sure.
You could do the math on that. So and one can only extrapolate that has to be poor people that are unable to meet their bills.
Absolutely. In the situation in Highland Park, which has a separate water system, and this is left over from Henry Ford, who wanted his own system for his own plant there, about half of the residents are without water in their homes.
Really?
Absolutely.
This is amazing.
The population has fallen from 60,000 to 16,000 because of the loss of jobs. The demographics are such that most people are either seniors or folks on disability raising children who are 5 years older or younger. So you have a situation of a population that's extremely vulnerable, extremely poor, being told that if they can't pay, they don't get to have water. We have lost people due to health complications from not having water in their apartment. We had a young boy who was taken out of school 2 weeks ago because of frostbite. People do not necessarily understand the connection between water and heat in the homes. Many of these older homes are steam heated. When you take away the water, you take away the heat. In these temperatures, that's a death sentence.
I used to live in Highland Park, and just as you said that, I could hear the steam radiators banging away. Mm-hmm. And also, I've heard reports that when water has been shut off in a home, that Child Protective Services have been called in and taken children away because they're not in a safe or healthy atmosphere.
Yeah, and further than that, and this goes to the criminalization of the poor attitude that has been taken by this administration, what ends up happening is if the water service gets shut off, and many times we have difficulty getting information from families, they're afraid to contact us to admit that they've lost water service, because as soon as Child Protective Services hears about it, they abduct the children from the home. We have one instance that was just heartbreaking. The husband had gotten into a car accident, had been in the hospital for a couple of months. Of course, the family had fallen behind on bills. They came in two police cars. They put the mother in one. They put the two children, the oldest of which was 10, the youngest of which was 6, into another police car as they were all crying and whatnot, brought them down to the police station, took the two children to two separate foster homes, took the mother to the police station and charged her with negligence. It took us months not only to pay the water bill, meaning the Sweetwater Alliance, the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization, the Highland Park Human Rights Coalition. There's several groups that have grown out of this water struggle. And the most heartbreaking part of it was that the bill was about $400. Each of those children was put into foster care at an expense to the state of $400 per month. They were put in separate homes. So even if you were approaching this from a totally cold-hearted, inhuman perspective, if you were just a bean counter, it doesn't make any sense at all to approach it this way.
Well, you may be pleased to know that, and I know your concerns are international. In fact, I want to talk about that in half a second. Is that the Bechtel Corporation is being paid by our tax dollars to rebuild the Iraqi water system and provide free water. But so I just alluded to the international aspects of that, as you did earlier. Now, you've recently returned from the World Social Forum. We had Thomas Ponaya on, who was there, and he reported on the World Social Forum. But actually, your tour of India extended a little further than Thomas Ponaya's, right? You were over there and dealt with other water activists in India. You know, I think it's probably strange that people even hear the phrase water activists. And this is very good, because this is one of these subterranean issues. That's a perfect analogy, isn't it? That I think is going to burst forward into all of our consciousness soon. So I don't know. Is that a question? I guess maybe what I should ask as a question is, tell us a little about your experience of going to India and what you saw and found out there.
I was very, very privileged to be able to go to India as a representative for Sweetwater Alliance and the Highland Park Human Rights Coalition to something called the People's World Water Forum. This was a forum that was created specifically to meet a few days before the World Social Forum to make recommendations and to kind of bring together activists and information about working on this water campaign. And there were about 200 people there. They represented 75 groups around the world. We made an attempt, and I think we're successful in bringing people from all the major continents of the world to talk about how does this issue play out in our countries, in our regions. And one of the things that I discovered coming from a water-rich environment is how differently things are playing out in areas where water is not abundant, where water scarcity is always something that has been struggled with traditionally in places like India and Africa and even places where there is water, but it's a question of transport, as in South America. I found from other activists that that the basic concepts of community, of what held a community together, were being destroyed by corporations that said that no longer could we share the basic things of life, that we had to have ownership of them, and that certainly people who had higher class, higher privilege, more ability to have access to the things were not feeling the struggle in the same way, and were oftentimes not very good allies to people who were at sort of like the bottom of the social heap. People who had certainly been able to be self-sufficient in the past, both with work of their own. I mean, the women water bearers, there are definitely cultures where people have walked always for miles to bring water, but the hardship that's been imposed on those cultures of having people walk double that amount of space. And actually, I was reading just the other week, Dr. Vandana Shiva, who's a wonderful writer and international activist on the water issue and on water democracy, wrote of an 8-year-old girl who had been sent by her family to go get water, and she was walking and walking and walking until she arrives in a village and dies before they can get her water to take back to her family. There are people who are dying in lesser developed nations because of water scarcity. There are people in our own town, in our own city, a stone's throw from here, who are dying because of a corporate imposed water scarcity. And we need to address this as a social issue, a human rights issue, and definitely as an ecological issue. This is a campaign for the sustainability of the planet and to repair our damaged culture.
Marie Mason is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's an organizer and representative of the Sweetwater Alliance based here in Michigan. And their concerns, as you can tell by what we've been been talking about so far, a privatization of water and also availability of essential services. I probably should have said this before, but their website is waterissweet.com. Waterissweet.com. I'm sorry, .org. .org. There, I'll write that correctly. And also, I will have that on my website as well. Now, you here you were in India, and you've given a couple of public reports, and I know there was one, and I was going to remind you of it. Hopefully, you'll know the one I mean, because the giveaway is that when you were giving a talk, and you were confronted by two men who were essentially asking you, how do you get off coming to India? And is that story in your... what I'm reminding you of it, do you?
Are you talking about the workshop that I was giving in India itself?
Right.
Yes, exactly. One of the really slick things that the water companies did to us up in Delhi, where the People's World Water Forum was held, was to actually have infiltrators. People were paid by Coca-Cola Company to come into the conference and to do everything they could to disrupt actual activists from speaking to each other, creating plans of action. And these two gentlemen came into the water mining workshop that I was chairing and began speaking very, very quickly and eloquently and with lots of charts and graphs and lots of numbers about how actually there was no such thing as water mining, and if you did rainwater collection, then actually you weren't taking more water than was going in. And by the time they were done showing the numbers, you would think that there was more water in India now because Coca-Cola was there than there was before. And as we were beginning to A, confront them on the information and say, just doesn't make sense, and B, say, thank you very much, you've had your 5 minutes and now we need to hear from other people who would like to make presentations, they made the assertion that A, only presentations that were based in science with people with several scientific degrees should be considered, and that certainly that was the only way that we should make decisions about water policy. And secondly, how dare I, as an international person, come to India and have an opinion or suggestion for local activists of what they should do about the situation in Pachamama or with Coca-Cola? And the answer to both of those questions is, this is a situation that requires more, not less, democratic input by the people who are closely affected. And certainly, we need to consider issues other than paid, well, I think Captain Paul Watson calls them biostitutes. But secondly, it is an international question and a problem. The hydrology of the planet is closely connected and not localized. And as we decimate the water supplies faster than they're capable of being recharged, we do change the water patterns in the entire world. And we need to address this question as a world of activists. And then the last point, of course, was that those same two men were accosted at the Coca-Cola plant later on in that month by Dr. Vandana Shiva and Maud Barlow, one of the co-authors of Blue Gold, when they went to go visit the Coca-Cola plant in Pachamama. And they said, how could you possibly put yourself out there as just an interested party when you're actually a paid Coca-Cola employee? So they were confronted.
Sometimes on radio it's hard to get some of these names, but Vandana Shiva, Vandana, just like it sounds, Shiva, S-H-I-V-A, just do a search on that incredible woman, Maud Barlow, as well. And let me see what kind of time we have. Oh, next to nothing, because there's so many issues, and we are just scratching the surface. Again, you can go to the Sweetwater Alliance website at waterissweet.org. Marie Mason has been my guest on the Peter Werby Show, and there's ongoing activity in Michigan to bring this to public attention. I think we have about 30 seconds.
Okay, absolutely. Very quickly. First of all, my number is, and I do want to put it out there,
okay,
because people can get in contact with me if you want to work on water, even if you just want to yell at me. 313-410-4155. Right now we have a free speech case in the 67th District Court for an activist who was arrested wearing a shirt that said, Ask Me About Ice Mountain. We're trying to work on the boycott of Coca-Cola and Ice Mountain. We are also inviting people. Please do come join us for International World Water Day, March 22nd at the Cass Co-op on Charlotte and Cass in Detroit, Michigan from 4 to 8 p.m. We're going to have videos. We're going to have poetry. We're going to have music. We're going to have tons of information. It'll be a fun time and also an opportunity to really get yourself up to speed on an issue that's going to affect you in the near future.
And we'll have this all on my website. If you go to the Detroit calendar, that'll all be there. Marie Mason, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, thanks so much.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Hello?
Hey, Bob, what are you doing, man?
No, I'm just leaving work. Why, what's up?
You should shoot across the border and meet me at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor. Dude, they have incredible girls from all over the world, and I'm telling you, these girls are hot.
Oh, man, I gotta go across the border. I don't know.
Come on, you big baby. It's just 5 minutes from the Bridger Tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. And get this, at Leopard's Lounge, you don't even have to pay a cover charge, ever. Plus, they even have free parking. You gotta meet me there. They have these two girls from Romania. Bro, I'm telling you, they're the friendliest girls I've ever met. Heck, all the girls at Leopard's Lounge are friendly.
Wait a minute, did you say no cover? Free parking and women from all over the world?
Bro, that's what I've been telling you. So, are you going to meet me at a Leopard's Lounge or what?
Dude, I'm so there. I'll see you in about half an hour. And hey, if you get there before me, tell the girls I'm on my way.
You got it. I'll see you at Leopard's Lounge.
Leopard's Lounge in Royal, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Royal.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
March 2004, David Hall reporting for the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Can you imagine having an interest rate under 3% fixed for 3 years? Well, you can with Rock Financial's exclusive new Smart Arm. Call today at 800-333-ROCK to find out the big difference the Smart Arm can make for you. Fix your rate for 3 years under 3%. And the best news? The highest the rate can ever go is lower than a lot of fixed rates. It's the flexibility of an adjustable with the security of a fixed. It's a win-win opportunity only from the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Find out the difference a little expert advice can make for you. Call 800-333-ROCK or visit us online at rockfinancial.com. 3 years under 3% and the security of a rate that's fixed. Rock Financial's exclusive Smart Arm. Call today. 800-333-ROCK.
Rate subject to market conditions, interest only for 3 years, APR 3.67. Points due at closing, some restrictions apply. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender. Call today, 800-333-ROCK.
The Riff Rocks with Rick Fox. We've got more nonstop rock. Next on the Riff.
Pontiac, fuel for the soul. Let the soul stirring begin at Red Holman Pontiac GMC in Westland. The time to buy now. Take delivery by February 29th and get up to $3,500 in rebates on more than 1,200 new Pontiacs and GMC trucks in stock. Right now, get up to $2,000 in instant value certificates on remaining 03 Pontiacs and GMC trucks and up to $1,500 on select 04s. Take advantage of the new signing drive lease program. No security deposit, no down payment, and Red Holman waives the first payment. What a deal! Lease pull ends back. GMAC leases expiring between now and August 31st, 04 can purchase or lease a new Pontiac or GMC truck, and all remaining payments are waived. Whether it's the performance of the all-new GTO, the wide-track handling of Grand Prix, Rudy Bonneville GXP, Sporty Grand Am, the fun-to-drive 5, or professional-grade GMC trucks, Red Holman Pontiac GMC at Westland has the vehicle for you. No dock fees or finance insurance managers at Red Holman. Never have been for 47 years. Never will. Red Holman Pontiac GMC truck in Westland, the deal of the sea. Just 2 miles east of I-275 at the Ford Road exit, or visit online. at redholman.com.
Hey, this is Nikki Six.
This is Brad from Three Doors Down.
Hi, this is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. And if it rocks, it's on the Ritz.
Celebrating 33 years of rock in the Motor City. This is the world famous 101 WRIF Detroit.
This station rocks.
Y'all want a single seat? Suck that. Suck that. Suck that. Y'all want a single seat? Suck that. Suck that. Suck that. Y'all want a single seat? Suck that. Suck that. Suck that. Y'all want a single seat? Suck that.